Hello, everybody. Welcome to RPG Cast, episode 802 for the week of February 21st, 2026. I'm Chris Privet here, bringing you this week's show about RPG news and stuff, or where you could just watch my big fat cow butt walk around the screen. Joining me today, that will make more sense if you're on the stream. If not, then just trust me, you missed it. Joining me today, we have Kelly Ryan.
You know, it's funny, when you described Project Gorgon, I was picturing more of a old school RuneScape-esque game, so I'm sort of surprised that its art style was more WoW.
Oh, hold on.
Oh, you can change it to RuneScape.
Check this out. Is this more RuneScape for you?
Yeah.
This is more like it, right?
Yeah.
That setting is called Retro Terrible.
Okay. That's so funny.
You can go up to here. It starts to lose its RuneScape look very quickly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we go all the way back up. Yeah. Graphics quality, retro terrible. Yeah. That's a thing.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's the MMO equivalent.
David says the Gorgon's settings range from what you remember EverQuest looking like to what EverQuest actually looked like.
That's like the MMO equivalent of having a CRT filter. That's beautiful. Anyway, continue introing.
Joining us as well is Ryan Costa.
See, when I first heard this Project Gorgon today, I thought it was just, you know, Diablo 2's cow level, except you're the cow.
Except you're the cow. Why not?
In Soviet Gorgon, you are cow level.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, that was a terrible joke.
It is. That was terrible. So I just letting you sit on that one. You know what you did.
Yeah, you know, I know. Imitating Yakov Smirnov. Hey, remember when he showed up on MST3K?
Yeah.
I'm like, I have no idea who this is.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know he was real. I thought it was just a saying that people said sometimes.
Uh-huh.
No, he's real, and apparently he had like a rough life before he moved to the United States. That whole in Soviet Russia shtick wasn't just a shtick. I'm sorry, most young people will have no idea what we're talking about. Moving on.
No, that's it. It's time to talk about what we've been playing. Do you want to hear my cow story?
Let's hear your cow story.
Do you want to hear my cow story? All right, so I'm playing Project Gorgon. It's an MMO. It's old school design, very exploration focused and grind focused, so it appeals to me. One of the weird things is they have animal forms you can become cursed into, and some people choose to just stay playing as the animals, and they are full fleshed out classes, totally viable to play the whole game as. So you can stay as an animal form. Has some downsides, like you can't do things that require hands, like sawing trees. And some NPCs won't talk to you because they're like, you're an animal, get out of my thing before you poop. Which is weird and speciesist, but it's the world we live in on this MMO. The effect of this is that for whatever reasons, in my sick head, I decided to pursue the cow class, which is apparently the best tanking class in the game. That sounds fun. So now I'm a milk tank, essentially. What, like Pokemon, except more cow-like. And I'm just sitting here. I'm living my life. I'm leveling my skills, growing some flowers, collecting some gardening somehow with hooves. We don't ask these questions. Some things just work, and we are appreciative. And while I'm just sitting there next to the side of the road doing, you know, Project Gorgon things, and somebody walks up to me and says, hey, look, it's a portable milk dispenser. And people can milk you if you're a cow in this game. It's like once every 45 minutes or something, you are available to be milked. And one of the thing about this game is milking requires consent. So when you are, when someone tries to milk you, it does a little pop-up and you have to say yes or no, and you can deny them. Say, no, you're not allowed to touch me. You can't milk me. How dare you? And So that's just a thing in this game. So I'll get pop-ups from time to time of people nearby. It's like, hey, can I have some milk? And it's like, have fun is what I usually just say yes and ignore it and move on with my day. This time, dude walks up to me, says, hey, it's a portable milk dispenser. And I'm like, well, I may as well lean into the RP for this one. I'm like, hi, would you like to sample my wares? And he's like, well, that depends. Are you a boy or a girl? And I'm like, very confused because, like, look, it's a cow that gives milk and has a visible udder on the model. And I'm like, I reply after being stunned for a little bit, like, well, I think the udder is pretty telling. And he's like, no, I mean you, the player. I don't want milk from a boy. I'm like, okay. I think for a second. I'm like, wait a second. My in-game character is female. This cow is obviously female. And he has no idea. So I just go, yep, I'm a girl. He's like, well, okay, then I think I will sample it. And then I get the prompt, player would like to milk you. I hit yes. He takes it, immediately drinks the milk, which is a little weird. Like, I'm drinking the milk from you right after I milked you. I don't know what that's trying to say, but okay. He's like, oh, it was delicious. And I'm like, all right, I guess we're going to keep role playing this. I hope it nourishes you greatly and you grow strong. And he's like, thank you. I think it will. Would you like some crabs? I'm like, what? It's like, may I give you some crabs after touching your udder? I'm like, sure, why the hell not? Give me crabs. And so he opened the trade window and he gave me 10 actual, freshwater crabs that were collected in the game. So random dude walked up to me, milked me, and gave me crabs is my new story for this game.
I would have screwed with the guy and said, it's not gay if you're a cow.
And then he's like, okay, well, thank you very much. And I'm like, you have a moo day. And we were on with our lives.
Did you need an adult?
I felt a little... I mean, I accepted the crabs. But yeah, I got milked and then I got crabs. And that's this is life in Project Gorgon.
Did you try to eat the crabs while maintaining eye contact?
Say what again? What?
Did you try to eat the crabs while making eye contact?
Oh, no, I couldn't eat them raw. I would need to go to a cooking fire and stuff, so no.
Ah, yes. Cows would get salmonella from raw cats.
Right? Exactly. Listen, there is some level of freedom left in the game. They don't restrict you from everything that would be difficult to do as an animal. I have to go and like shuck those crabs. I think I already did. Yeah, I got all the crab meat out of them. Then that's it. Lady Death in chat, would a herbivore willingly eat crabs? I'm like, I think they don't. I don't. No, obviously, but also I think when the big farm animals get in the eating mood. If something happens along the path their mouth is going over, they just eat it. yes, IRL says, you're sticking on a vegetarian diet, and that's true. I'm trying to become a vegetarian cow because grass-fed cows in this game produce milk more often, so people can milk me more often. Why do I want to do that? I don't know, but I've decided that's my role in serving the community, is to be a frequent source of milk. This is how I contribute to the economy.
Real life trading house Gorgon mode is quite interesting. Uh-huh. So yeah, I guess you do need grass fed here.
Yes. Yep. and it's real annoying too, because if I just eat one piece of meat, it's gonna remove that tag for me. So it's like really annoying to try and maintain that, given the benefits it provides. But well, here we are.
Can you be handed crafted recipes and it's just like, oh, there was hidden meat in that?
I mean, I can be handed crafted recipes, yes, like via trade or whatever. And it would be on me to know that, yes, this particular recipe uses meat or not, but usually it says, so I don't know.
Okay.
Also there's a vegan tag apparently. So like, I guess that implies that I'm okay to do like milk and eggs, which I need you guys to know that I don't know how I feel when I drink my own milk, okay? And it makes me feel like maybe I shouldn't be doing that.
See, I thought that vegans didn't do milk and eggs because it
They
was
don't. No,
unethically
no. Yeah, they don't.
sourced.
But I don't need to be vegan. I just need to be vegetarian.
Okay.
So, and the fact that the tags are distinguished means it sounds like I don't need to be completely vegan about how I approach what I eat in this game. But also, it's not clearly documented anywhere. And it takes 2 weeks of following that diet for the tag to appear on your character. And then
Okay,
I
so
think you could
they
lose
keep you
it by just,
honest.
yeah, they keep you honest. And I think, so that's why it sucks so much if I like accidentally eat the wrong thing, because it'll just be gone. And it's like, oh, why do they got to make it so hard?
Because role playing.
So there's another wrinkle in this that I haven't thought about that I just realized may ruin this entire thing. I'm also a werewolf.
You're a werewolf cow.
Yeah, I'm a werecow. Or is it a cow wolf? I don't know what it would be. Where is
Where?
it still would be a werewolf, right? This
Well,
is like the were
where?
Sonic the Werehog. Like, no, he's just a werewolf because he turns into a wolf.
Well, yeah, because where means man.
Okay, so I'm a cow wolf then. Or a woman wolf. I don't know what we're going with. And one of the things that the wolves do is after they kill things is they eat the corpses to get regeneration buffs. So like that would be eating meat in the wolf form, which I'm forced to be in 3 days out of the month whenever the moon is full, and generally don't tend to play in so far other than that, which means like every time I eat a frickin' corpse as the wolf, which is an important skill for their survivability, I'm going to be penalized and lose my vegetarian tag. Oh, why has everything got to be so complicated? It's too much like real life with how I have to manage being a werewolf in real life. Oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that.
All you need is this game to have sentient carrots or something, and you'll be fine.
No sentient carrots that I've found, but Cyril
Because
says,
you can
just go full fantasy novel and call yourself a soul taken. I don't know what that means. I haven't read that book.
I'm sure your husband has.
Oh no, are we getting into Twilight or something with that?
Well, doesn't your husband read a lot of paranormal romance?
Yes.
They were the ones that introduced me to Chuck Tingle.
Yeah.
No, wait, no, it was Andy introducing Vaughn to Chuck Tingle, which introduced me
I'm
to Chuck
sorry.
Tingle. Just a human centipede of wrong. But
How
I.
has Chuck Tingle been the most sane thing I've heard in the last 10 minutes?
Oh, because it's us and we're weird.
I can stop talking about this game, but that is literally all I've been playing because I'm having a lot of fun.
I like the run animation there.
And I was gonna say, is this weirder or less weird than, my little cat farm?
Yeah, I forgot you're playing eugenics, aren't you?
Yeah, and apparently Dalandar is playing eugenics too.
Yeah, this is just the animal episode, isn't it?
Well, a good chunk of us on the site are furries. But no, I finally got kind of my own little breeding hovel to produce cats with pretty decent stats all around. Well, I say all around. It's like a perfect seven in two categories, which is the highest your cat stats can get naturally without like any breeding or anything. Because ideally you want to like keep regenerating or keep passing the days until you get at least one or two strays with a seven and one stat, and then breed those strays together to get better stats all around. It's very resource managey, but I feel like I've kind of figured some of it out. I've watched a Dalandar, I recommend just going to YouTube and just typing in eugenics beginner tips because you'll learn a lot that the game doesn't really tell you.
I'll figure it out my own way. As it is, I'm listening to you say this and kind of thinking, did you just create a breeding room in your house?
Yeah. Yeah, more or less. Because you have to pretty much fill the breeding room with like lots of furniture so that they will breed, and then you just kind of pick and choose which kittens you keep and which kittens you donate. And you to kind of master the breeding, you also want to donate kittens to Tink as much as you can, because Tink will give you the insight into the stats that you want to be focusing on. And also Tink will let you will give you the ability to mark which cats have good stats and stuff, so that you're not just sitting there staring at the house going, where the heck is everything?
I thought that was a key component to owning cats.
Yeah, no, it is.
Do you have to get multiple cat litter? Is that like a thing versus regular
No,
litter?
they just You're a genuine crazy cat lady, because they just poop wherever they want.
Oh,
I
all
don't.
right.
I don't like the poop on the ground, so I do try to get rid of it.
Yeah, no, you have to. Otherwise, it will accumulate and they will start fighting because they're not comfortable.
I mean, so far in the few times I've exceeded days, they just like fighting anyway.
Yeah, you have to have comfort and stimulation up high to basically breed them and keep them from fighting all the time.
Filing that under it's probably important, but will probably be ignored.
Yeah, but no, I do recommend watching just a couple of YouTube videos just to kind of get you going with the breeding, because I was just kind of letting him breed willy-nilly, and then I watched a couple of YouTube videos about it and was kind of like, well, no, there is a finesse to this that you sort of need to know about to basically just kind of make your life easier, especially since the game doesn't tell you a lot of the stuff. Like I didn't know that the maximum natural stat that a cat could have was 7.
I like how you left that like that was supposed to
No,
be a big deal, but I haven't played the game, so
I was trying to kind of collect my thoughts, because there's a lot of depth to this game.
that I can agree with. So far, though, I play a lot of roguelites and I play a lot of tactical games. So even if I don't know the ins and outs on making the best cats, I will have to see what wall I end up hitting to see, like, do I need additional help, or is it just instead of taking 3 hits to beat this boss, it's taking two, it takes me 4.
What do I want to say without spoiling? It looks like if you're gonna want to survive the later acts, you are gonna want to look at some breeding guides so that your cats can basically have better survival all around. Because some of the Some of these levels get pretty hard. Like I'm only in Act 2, and there's the desert level in Act 2, where if you well, it has a mechanic where you can't heal at the beginning of at the end of your the each round because you're overheated. But thanks to a YouTube video, I learned that if you keep cycling the days, you can control the weather. So if you go into that level when it's raining, it'll kind of negate that mechanic. And that's kind of a literal game changer, because that mechanic is kind of a pain in the ass to contend with.
So from what it sounds like, I have to join Feline Tinder. Got it.
Yeah. And yeah, the YouTube videos just kind of taught me little things like that really kind of help going forward is the thing. You get side quests where you're kind of hindered But thanks to the YouTube videos and the subreddit, there's ways that you can kind of completely negate some of that hindrance with the side quests.
Do side quests, got it.
Yeah. And side quests unlock bonus areas and different like weapons and there are a lot more classes in this game than I thought there were.
I have five.
So you have the basic cleric
Six.
or
Yes, I have cleric, warrior, tank, mage, thief. Am I forgetting one? Hunter.
yeah, because each time you clear an area, you will unlock more classes, and some of them can apparently be pretty broken. So watching a tier list of all the different classes isn't a bad idea, just so that you can kind of see what would be useful to you to bring into a fight. Like I don't know what kind of what you consider a spoiler, if or if you consider like knowing what classes are available or a spoiler or not.
I wouldn't necessarily consider it as such. I try not to look into those kind of things, though, just from a personal standpoint, because typically almost every game I play is for some form of coverage for the site. So the more I look into other things, the more likely it is that I won't be able to create my own experience and
Okay. So
such
you
like
don't
that.
want to know one of the classes that I have unlocked that isn't the basic ones, do you?
I wouldn't mind knowing what the class is, but if you were to tell me if I do this, this, and this, it'll be unstoppable, that's where I would say it's probably too far.
Well, okay. I'll just tell you what it is, and you can kind of imagine your own
Version of
brokenness,
it.
but version of it, because a class that I un unlocked is the Necromancer.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's
So
not
given
an,
what you,
isn't it a Necromouncer?
yeah,
All
Necromancer.
right, good, much better.
But given what you know about death in this game, imagine what you can do with said Necromancer.
I'm afraid of the kittens that you can create with a necromancer.
Well, the class doesn't really affect the kittens that are created at all. It's more the stats just kind of help with your with what kind of classes you'll create initially.
Yep.
But Necromancer is such a fun class to play as.
I did get my first broken feeling combo, though, with the last run, which was my first time using a thief, and its passive ability is being able to move every time you pick up a coin. And then I got a additional ability for it that every time you pick up a coin, you get one more damage.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that is pretty broken.
So I basically one-shot the rat boss in the alley. Was like, all right, just kept walking around. Like, wait, as I don't know if it's the thief or if it's just a side effect I haven't really fully picked up on. The cleric has definitely helped because whenever you attack or defeat an enemy, a pickup will occur, like will drop. And since coins are the most air quote useless pickup, the floor just becomes littered in coins eventually.
Yeah, and see, I haven't dabbled with the thief yet. So knowing now that there's some broken thief abilities, I kind of want to play around with it now.
That's the hearing there are more classes than you thought is a very nice thing to hear because I was a little worried that because I played like Metal Slug Tactics, for example, and I put like 30 hours into that game, but there was only three real biomes. So I thought I had unlocked almost every biome I could find. And like, wait, where would desert fit in that? So even just hearing that much made me go, oh, Act Two might have its own set of biomes.
Yeah, like the desert one is the first one, and I unlocked after you finish the desert, I unlocked the bunker. And I still need to do the desert hard mode so that I can see what the other route is. Because for those that don't know, each path has a hard mode that you can optionally do that has harder enemies but better rewards. And that's how you unlock different routes. Because like the first act branches between when you start out at the alley, and then it branches between the sewers and the junkyard. And then after that, the sewers go into the caves, and the junkyard goes into the graveyard.
Interesting.
And so some of the oh my God, the caves boss drives me crazy. I don't want to spoil it.
I haven't made it there yet, but I'll try to be as prepared as I can get.
So you're not interested at all in looking up like strats or looking up what bosses do ahead of time?
Nope, I figure it'll be interesting to me after a couple of runs altogether if it's more difficult than, say, Darkest Dungeon 2, which isn't to say, like, I'm not saying I'm the best gamer around type thing, but I did beat and review Darkest Dungeon 2 when there was no guides out yet for it.
Okay.
So it'll
So what you're saying is
sometimes
you're the best gamer around, really. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but for a game like this, it's always a interesting side to it is, oh, I have so much difficulty with this enemy, and then finding out later no one else thought it was that difficult. Like, I've never lost to it, but just using the alley as an example, the first boss you face that has multiple little kittens, I can't remember, it's like Marley or something like that. Its name's basically a big mama cat that every time you try to defeat or hit one of the younger cats, she teleports in and instead be hit. I've had more difficulty with that boss than anything else so far.
Oh, there's going to be some bosses that make you want to cry.
I am expecting this. It'll be interesting to see. I played very little of Binding of Isaac, but I'm not good necessarily at action games. So I'm just like, wow, this seems way too difficult. But for someone that plays a lot of action games, they might think like, oh, this is an interesting test of
I thought it was a
abilities.
tactical RPG.
It
Yes,
is.
Binding of Isaac is.
Oh, okay.
Eugenics is a tactical. So
Yeah.
with my background being in tactical for so much of my life, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of crazy they can throw at me in a tactical game. Be like, okay, if I lose like 3 times to a boss, be like, okay, I need to particularly plan around this one now. I'm also just worried. I'm glad that it seems like it ends after this third set of sort of run through as like once I beat the cave, that's it kind of thing, because you always start at the beginning again.
Yeah,
It's like, do I really want to do 5 hours just to get to the new content?
yeah, no, each act is its own little gauntlet.
Okay.
So, once you like the desert, you'll always start at the desert if you do the desert.
Okay. Do you get to pick acts, or once is act one is done, you don't get to go back anymore?
You get to pick acts.
Excellent.
Yeah. Which is actually really nice, 'cause like I saw one YouTube video that said if you're struggling with the desert area, it means that you kind of need to run the act one a little bit more and unlock more stuff. Something that another YouTube video pointed out was that each of your class icons show which bosses you've defeated with that class.
Okay.
That unlocks different like class abilities that can go into the pool. I wasn't aware of that. I was like, what are these? I don't understand what these icons mean. I thought that it was debuffs, but it's no, he it's yeah. B basically every time you beat a boss with a different class, it will tell you like you've unlocked so and so with Necromancer
Nice.
or that sort of thing. So yeah, you'll want to kind of do different, And I'm glad it does that because it encourages you to do different runs with different classes.
I have even more reason to try out everything.
Yeah. Like, I need to actually look at my own classes and kind of see what I still need to do in the sewer and and basically the alley run to see if I need to maybe try to bring some people through the junkyard / graveyard. Because when I'm just doing kind of a resources run, I tend to just do the alley, and depending on how much of a tough time I had, I'll either end it there, go ahead and go into the caves. So yeah. I hope this doesn't sound too dull for the poor listener.
Breeding cats to be machines of destruction to go through all various areas should not be boring to anyone that's listening to an RPG cast, because it's amazing.
I mean, yeah, thank you. That's a good summary, I think.
And I'm just amazed for myself just how sucked into this game I am. Because I haven't been able to put it down. I have not touched my poor... I've barely touched my poor Dragon Quest this week, and it makes me feel bad.
But are you still enjoying it so far?
Yeah.
When you do pick it up. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still enjoying the game quite a bit. I just unlocked the ability to equip two jobs at once.
Nice.
And I'm already enjoying doing leveling up jobs anyway, because unlike the previous games, this game actually kind of shows you the path that your jobs can take. So that I'm no longer like having to consult a guide to see like, well, should I be going for gladiator, should I be going for sage? And it's like, no, it shows you in the menu like you need to level up warrior and martial artist to unlock gladiator, or you know, that kind of stuff.
Funny thing for me was it still ended up causing just a little personal irritation, because when you first get the classes, they will tell you what the intermediate ones are later, kind of pops up. So I selected each of my first classes to swap into, and I happened to have both sailor and shepherd. And I was like, okay, there's going to be a lot of options for the intermediate classes. Let me take a look. And oh, what do you mean? I have to turn both of them into thieves now. And I didn't want to use duplicates of anything. So I got a little sad for a bit, because I'm like, oh, I have to go through like two islands with two thieves.
Yeah, I can see that being annoying.
It was worth it in the end, because I enjoyed the classes that that came from using them both. And I had a lot of fun with the game, but it seems like the more I talk to people that know other Dragon Quests, it's like Ys 10 all over again, where if you've played other Dragon Quests, you won't think this is nearly as impressive as you did.
Oh,
yeah, that is kind of unfortunate. This is one of the weaker entries in the series, but
Dragon Quest at least.
Yeah.
I mean, I would play this so.
How long does it feel?
I looked at a guide, and I'm halfway through the game.
And I'm sorry, I cut you off when you were about to say you'd play it instead of what?
Oh, I would play Dragon Quest VII before Ys 10 again anytime.
But what about Ys 10's Nordic Plus or whatever? Ys 10 Nordic Track?
Not interested.
Okay.
But, yeah, unlocking Moonlighting, I want to say, is about the halfway point. At least according to looking at a walkthrough.
Is Moonlighting having two jobs or something?
Yeah, okay, that's what cool. It's called.
That's great.
Sorry.
No, that's funny. I love it.
It could also be the term for Project Gorgon here. Moonlighting as
moon
a
cowboy. Moonlighting.
I have. Yeah, no, that's what I say. I moonlight as a wolf.
That's actually pretty clever.
Uh-huh. I'm a cow who moons lights as a wolf.
The only thing I would add to my version of, like, I played through Dragon Quest VII as well, is even though you're halfway through content-wise, the later dungeons in that are a bit longer and islands are a little bit more in-depth kind of thing, mm-hmm. so it's still going to be a little bit more than halfway.
Yeah, I imagine so. I'm just happy that if you're somewhat overpowered, you can just smack things and instantly win fights.
I ended up doing both, just smacking things to instantly win and then running in to fight the enemy anyways, just because I wanted vocation points.
Yeah. If you're smacking things, you only get one vocation point. If you're actually fighting things, you get multiple vocation points.
Yes.
For those that don't know, I personally don't mind it. I figured if I, because the wolf boy has the whistle ability, that lets you summon monsters instantly. So later on, if you want to grind up your jobs, you can just sit there and spam that.
It's potentially a mild spoiler, but have you had Moonlighting Long yet?
No, I literally just got it last night.
Okay, there's an aspect that may be beneficial. Do you care if I share?
No, go ahead.
Because you can moonlight, if your second class is a mastered one, you get extra vocation points. So even when you're slashing through the enemies, you'll get two instead of one. And when you fight a regular enemy, instead of five, you get eight.
Okay, that's cool.
But like, I can see it being useful that way, or having two brand new classes so you can level them both five at a time, right?
Yeah.
It gives you a lot of options right now.
Yeah, because like right now, my main character is a gladiator, but just kind of going through the list, it's like, well, if I master mage, then I unlock something different with the warrior mage combination. So I subclass that one, working on mage while I'm working on gladiator. But now that I know, I could probably level up mage faster if I stuck him back to warrior. Because I think for the hero job class, you have to have like a certain number of classes or advanced classes mastered.
Yes.
So in a way, that would kind of make things go a little bit faster. So thank you for letting me know that, because I did not know that.
And it's something I wish I would have looked at the the final list of advanced classes earlier, because by the time I finally got around to it, I realized, like, oh, the ones I actually have to max out aren't ones that I've started yet. So I only had like one character that could be one of the advanced classes, because I just never took them down the route to lead to that point. Like, the amount of leveling I would have to do and grinding, it's just way too much. Still got one of every class, but it did limit if you're not paying attention. So,
yeah, but I'm still enjoying the game.
Glad to hear.
Matt said that he bailed on it because he wasn't having a good voice. Well, that's spoiling our feedback. Should we get into feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have other things we wanted to talk about. Our feedback last week, I forgot to put the question in. Dang it. Hang on, let me find the question.
Well, that happens. There was one game I can bring up. I played a demo of.
How many demos have you played?
I played eight, but we were only going to talk about six of them, so I thought I'd bring up the seventh. Game called Altered Alma. It's a Metroidvania that's more action platform, in my opinion. Kind of reminded me gameplay wise of Strider, so just the like ninja like movements back and forth was kind of fun. And the movement mechanic, normally I hate and suck at platforming, but they get a dagger where they can shoot it out and teleport where the dagger gets thrown to. So you use that to like climb up areas that you normally wouldn't. It's almost like you can do it infinite amount of times if you're on a wall, like throw it into the wall kind of thing. So you can just kind of slowly make your way up a wall just by throwing your knife into it over and over. And it was still, I fell in areas where it's like, here's your practice. Don't die by jumping into this area. And I just jumped into the area hundreds of times because that's just me and platforming. But that dagger mechanic was kind of cool. So it's one that's staying on the wish list after playing it. So be interesting to go through, and I'm expecting some more like combat unlocks and bonding, because even in the 30 minutes I played, there was like romance options and a whole lot of backstory and conversations with the one crew member I had. So I'm assuming you get more crew. It'll be rather in depth for Metroidvania, I'm guessing.
Okay. Our question of the week last week, what is the most disappointing remake you'd ever played? And from Plotty M, it may be recency bias, but Dragon Quest VII Reimagined is disappointing enough. I set it aside. They cut dozens of monsters out of the game, cut 90% of the party talk, cut monster classes completely, cut some islands. However, in all this reimagining, they still left the most annoying back and forth time wasting sections there.
Wow.
Excuse me. He's so disgusted it made me sneeze. it's pretty, but I couldn't continue with DQ Valley Girl. Too vapid for me. DQ Valley Girl. I feel like that's an inside joke from the community that I don't get.
I'm Maribel, I think is one of his least favorite characters that I've heard. So
yeah.
Maybe that's a reference to Maribel.
Yeah, she is kind of a jerk. But, yeah, so I don't disagree with him with any of those points. It sounds very, yeah. moving on from Strawberry Eggs, it's actually a remaster, but I was disappointed with Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles remaster. I was excited to play a touched-up version of this game online with people, then the means to play online was made needlessly complicated. And you can't even play through the story multiplayer, just individual dungeons. I played the first two dungeons and never played again. Yeah, that one sounded disappointing, especially since it seemed like online would have kind of fixed a lot of the problems with that game. Nobody else really got into Crystal Chronicles Remastered.
I didn't even get into the original versions, honestly, so it's a big hole in my library, despite having a few of them.
Oh, no worries. And then from Shaman, Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl are my picks. A shot-for-shot remake of the weakest main series games with virtually nothing brought over from the much better Platinum. Awkward adaption of the grid-based movement to analog controls and giving the Elite Four and especially Cynthia competitive class strategies and stats the player are expected to beat with an in-game team. I don't want to be that person, but I didn't have any problems beating Cynthia. I don't know, maybe it was because I overleveled.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've heard a lot of people don't really care for that particular game or that particular version of the game. I didn't know until today that it was outsourced either. Mm. Which probably explains a lot.
And didn't happen to add it there, but I would like to add mine, Lufia Curse of the Sinistrals. They take one of my favorite turn-based RPGs from Super Nintendo and remake it into a bad action game.
Oh yeah, I have that game, but I haven't even touched it. So I don't know. So that's our question of the week from last week. We might have one this week. Given that Friday there's going to be I won't even spoil it. Next Friday there's going to be a Pokemon Direct, and I'm curious what people's predictions will be and what actually comes true.
Already know two things that are coming out of it, right?
Yeah, that's a later story. So, well, do we want to get into the news?
Yeah.
Hey, all that Fuga money's funded a New Dot Hack game.
We sure it isn't the other way around.
It, it might have been. I don't know. CyberNet Connect 2 announced a new Dot Hack game called Dot Hack Zero, being published and developed by the studio with the permission of IP holder Bandai Namco. And that series is 30 years old now.
Yeah.
See, I'm not sure until I look deeper into who develops what games, I would have been able to guess that this is a passion project for CyberConnect 2, just because there's nothing being done with that IP. So they had to go, I want to do something with this.
Well, what kills me is knowing that, I don't know if you would consider Dot Hack an isekai, but given how many MMO isekais are out there now, I'm surprised that it took us this long to get a new Dot Hack game.
Yeah, I mean, it was ahead of the time in that regard, but like, my problem with Dot Hack is always like, how the hell do I even catch up on the history here?
I don't think you do. I think you just
don't
play and enjoy.
Play this one.
Just play this one. Okay.
Yeah.
But what if this is the bad one? Oh, right. Then I don't need to worry about it because there's no reason to play it.
I played that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I played that quadrilogy back in the day.
Well, and then the other one?
I have not played GU, even though I want to.
And then wasn't there more after that or no?
No, I think that was it.
Just the... I don't know how many were with GU, because I know Last Recode was a remastered collection of it, but was there only one GU, or is there like four of those too?
There were three GU games. Just the remaster just collected all of them. On the PS2, there were three GU games, and the new one collected.
If you play on PS2, you have seven games to play.
Yeah, but... Yeah, and I didn't realize that Bamco was the rights holder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a Bamco game.
Mm-hmm. So, there you go.
I chuckled that they had to mention that it's not related to the Dot Hack Zero novel written by... Like, they just couldn't think of a different name. They're like, oh, we have to use one of the books anyway.
Yeah, if that's the name they want, I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
Wow. Cyril in the chat, like, oh, Dot Hack GU is a sequel about the side antagonist from the anime that came before the first set of games, kind of. But okay. Not the anime that came with the games, nor the other anime. The anime that came before the games.
Yes.
See, that's the other thing about Dot Hack, is it's polymorphic, right? It's multiple medias for getting all the story. And that's why it's like, how do you even catch up on this? And like, you know, what isn't all worth reading or viewing or whatever. And like, how do you figure out what?
Yeah, I tried to watch the TV show and was bored to tears.
I like the first one. It's just by the end of it, I'm like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Also, one of the funniest things earlier in our Vaughn and I's relationship was that we was at Borders and I was looking at the manga and I was like, "Oh, Dot Hack," and he's like, "That's a book," and I said, "Well, duh, it's a book. We're at Borders," and then I pick it up and don't see any comic pages. I'm like, "Oh, he meant a book," as then because I didn't know what light novels were back then. I felt so freaking stupid.
Oh, light novels, yeah. But wasn't there a character named Light in that game?
I don't know.
Okay. No, wait, that's Death Note, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah.
But that whole interaction, that's a book.
That's a book. Well, yeah, we're in a bookstore.
Yes, it's a book. We're in a bookstore. Oh, you meant a book.
You thought it was a manga, right? All right. Yeah. A book.
Oh, it's a guy.
Oh, with words and no pictures? They still make those? It's a book.
Yeah. Not my proudest moment.
A book.
Right up there with inventing the Blockbuster video for books. Oh, you mean a library?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Darkhaven begins its Kickstarter campaign and has a demo available.
I have that demo downloaded. And I've already kickstarted the game, and I haven't even played the demo. Now, the reason why is because one of the guys, Eric Schaefer, is one of the people who worked was part of Double Damage Games, which made the Rebel Galaxy and Rebel Galaxy 2 Outlaw, which Andy worked on some of those, both of those. And okay. So because I trust them and like the stuff they've put out in the past, even though other people didn't, like, cause not Rebel Galaxy wasn't for everyone, but the people who are into it, I'm one of them. And it was for me. I want to see what's next for them. So I actually chose to fund this Kickstarter, even though I usually don't. And with that said, I think I'm playing a demo and we're doing a summary of demos upcoming, right? I need to, Ryan, where's that channel? I don't even know what the timelines are for that.
You'll be able to get it in the features discussion.
Okay, but good.
Yes, we are doing the Steam Next Fest again this time around, and that's why I didn't personally play this demo, even though it is available, because it will be covered in the Steam Next Fest that's going to be coming out within a week or two, and look forward to a whole bunch of games being showcased in there.
Unless we decide we don't let people kickstart games cover them, which in which case I won't be writing about that, but...
Yeah, in this instance, I wouldn't go against that just because it's 100 to 150 words. Not all of them are going to. It's what interests you and you're trying to talk. Like, this is an indie game people should check out. It's not a, you know, they're backing me and therefore it's a 10 out of 10 type situation.
Gotcha.
But if you don't feel comfortable talking about it because you're like, I want my money back, that is understandable.
Anyway, so we've got this situation brewing where we've got lots of action RPGs in development again, by which I mean this one and the Greek one, Titan Quest 2, and then going on. Now those are the two that come to me, and that's it. Oh right, Path of Exile 2 is technically still being developed, even though it's kind of out, but not really. I don't know what that means. And so it's exciting to see all these action RPGs. I'm curious to know which ones are going to actually still be, you know, that are going to live. Which ones will have legs?
Because we've got another Kickstarter underway for Belle's Fanfare, which is set in a dark fantasy world where a substance named Aura stems from the impurities of the soul.
Hold on. Breaking news. The Dark Haven Kickstarter. They have a $500,000 goal, which I appreciate they have a high goal because games are expensive to make, and a game like this should be expensive to make. I know this wouldn't be the full funding you would need to make the whole game, but it's like a real amount of money that they'd be raising from Kickstarter. They've only gotten $163,000 so far. This Kickstarter's been up for like 5-6 days, and influencers in like the Diablo and Path of Exile communities have been playing this on stream, and we haven't met the goal yet. I've got concerns. Because this is a Diablo-like game from people who made the original Diablo games, and it's not funded yet. All right.
Concerning?
It's got 27 days to go. They might just have to do one of those where they just make consistent progress and get over the finish line near the end, which is never a great feeling, but I guess it's possible. All right. Anyway,
Steam Next Fest can help it out, too. I didn't see too many other games that fit this particular type of niche, so if it's good, people will talk about it.
Well, Cyril in the chat says the demo's pretty rough. That's gonna be concerning too.
Oh boy.
All right, so what's Belle's Fanfare? Another Kickstarter. This one they've raised $700,000 out of a goal of $47,000. So this is the opposite issue. They asked for too little, an unreasonably small amount, but they've gotten way beyond what the Darkhaven folks wanted at all. So that's weird.
They hit all their stretch goals to the point where they're probably not even like, we're never going to get that kind of money. You don't have to worry about making it type stuff.
And now it's like, uh-oh, we need more stretch goals, which pro tip, don't add more stretch goals. Use the money to make the game good. Stop trying to add stretch goals.
So this is inspired by the first 3D Zelda games. which are currently, and the Kickstarter is currently underway.
Oh, so it's like Ocarina Time like?
Yeah.
That seems a weird choice to imitate, but all right.
And it looks like you're playing as a demon girl.
Do you have a fairy that says, "Hey, listen"?
I can't tell from the news story.
Boy, pay attention instead.
Actually,
Well, it looks
that's
like you get
true,
an
yeah.
enchanted shield. Maybe it talks to you. So this is
But
like got a Studio Ghibli vibe to the hero creation and being sent out in the world. And then okay, now it's Zelda. All right. Have fun. Anyway, so there's a trailer you can watch and I don't know. See if
the
you're into
campaign run
this.
the campaign's going to run until March 6th.
And it has been successful.
Yep.
Moving on, Dating and Dragons, a Love
What?
Quest
Oh
Kickstarter
my gosh,
came.
more kickstarting.
Is the season, I guess.
All right, this one they want $20,000. They're at 117. So again, they asked for way too little, but they've soared past their goal.
And yeah, this is combining tabletop RPG and visual novel, which is a combination I have never thought about before. Looks cute though.
Yeah.
So, like, how is it an
Visual
RPG?
style. You're rolling dice.
Yeah,
You're
I
rolling
think you're
dice. Okay, so it's under the tabletop category then.
yeah, you
That's
have a
my
character
guess.
you have a character sheet, and I imagine that your different dating actions are gonna involve dice rolls. You know, like flirt,
Oh, is
charm,
this a meta game?
metagame.
So is this like a visual novel that you play while playing a fake D&D thing at the table?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
No,
Yeah.
Oh, it
I
looks like
think
you can
that
date a
it's
dragon, dude. So
I think
that's
that it's playing it straight because the article says you're in the role of an adventurer starting their journey in the town of
No,
Hordecroft.
but it says meet the love interests, and these are all the people around the player. So yeah, there's some
They're
stuff going on here.
cosplaying really well, I guess.
No, I think it takes place in the fantasy world.
Okay.
And they're playing a game. Yeah, okay.
Oh, either way, set to
Oh,
release.
or D&D is just a vehicle for the trailer. So then you're just in a fantasy world doing stuff and meeting people along the way. Okay, fine. Fine. I get it. Also, strategically placed clouds, apparently. So what's next?
The game is supposed to come out in November 2027, by the way, on
Sure.
Steam.
Yeah, why
So,
not? It'll probably
they
happen.
needed $20,000 over the next year and a half, huh?
Yeah.
Ariana and the Elder Codex demo released. Is this one you played, Dalandar?
I did not because Jordan from our team did a impression on it that we will be talking about in the editorials.
Gotcha.
It's
I
what I do know of it is it's a 2D side-scrolling RPG from Compile Heart, and my first question based off of my recently playing Calamity Angels was, were you sure you wanted to do this? To which Jordan responded, yes, it was fun. And I went, really? Are you sure?
The game looks fun.
Oh,
The combat looks like it reminds me of Dust in Elysian Tale, which is one of my favorite games of all time.
Well, I doesn't this have a vibe of like Odin Sphere?
Yeah, a little bit.
There's a third company with Compile Heart and Idea Factory that worked on this that gave me hope, but why can't I remember? Does it say in the article by any chance?
Yeah,
Don't
I'm
see it.
getting more Odin Sphere from this.
It wasn't Vanillaware, but there's a Hyde. They did Digimon Survive.
Okay.
And typically speaking, based off of Madomadogatari, which also had Sting working on it, Idea Factory Compile Heart games are always better when there's a third team on it involved. So this does honestly look good. I had to make fun of Idea Factory a little bit.
So it looks like you go into the books, you fix their problems, and then I guess at some point the books kind of interact with each other. So that sounds neat. And
As soon as you say Odin Sphere, my ears perked up.
I mean, it's not fully Odin's Sphere, right? Like, I don't see them sitting there growing fruit while they're playing, but, you know, something. It's got some of that vibe to it, like the framing of the girl in a large chair with a book, and then you jump into the book and you do things, and then you jump into a different book, so you got multiple storylines that will probably interact at some point, but who knows?
Well, one of the things I liked about Odin's Sphere was that the action combat was a little more fast paced than your standard Metroidvania, where, you know, Alucard is just sitting there swiping at the ether. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
It does.
Yeah. So I'll have to wishlist this. It looks cool. Moving on, we've got an Eldritch Horror roguelite called Dive or Die, Children of Rain.
Okay. So this one was weird in a couple of ways that are just like, seriously, why? Because I wrote a little synopsis of my gameplay of dive into the scary depths to be stabbed in the face by various plant life as you basically play that electric underwater level of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the NES.
Oh, no.
It's fun collecting the loot, yes, but it's really easy to die while you're searching, and there's no leeway when the oxygen hits zero, you're dead. When crazy creatures of the dark chase you, you're going to die there, too.
Are there random electrifying gates that you can barely avoid, or spinning fire rods or whatever? And
in this instance, it's you can barely see the plant life. When you get close to it, they reach out, grab you, and start draining your health and oxygen.
Gotcha. So the evil plants.
Still works the same way.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And basically, there's no trauma-inducing sonic music to make it easier to register when to return. So you're just, eventually you'll get lost and be like, oh, I found this. This is, oh no, I'm dying now. And they also have to make the settlement, you maintain happiness and sanity. So in other words, they went, Darkest Dungeon was too simple and needed more visceral real-time face stabbing. Like, it's for people that like this type of game, I'm sure like this is going to be difficult and interesting. Like, the character or the designs while you're going exploring was fun, and collecting, because you're collecting the resources while you're underneath, like in the water, you need to get to like food for everyone to survive. So you're trying to collect as much as you possibly can. And it didn't, at least in the very early going, was not easy.
What happens if you die? Do you just run out of people eventually?
I don't know if it's a you'll run out of money type thing, but there's a tavern where you can recruit more people.
Mm.
So, but as a person that's never really fully, I guess, lost in a game like this, because like I compared it to Darkest Dungeon, and in Darkest Dungeon, if you have no gold, you can't hire new recruits. So, like, would that mean it's game over and I have to delete my save? I don't know. I never knew that in Darkest Dungeon either. Hmm. So I don't know what happens if you fully lose everybody and it's like, well, you have no way to survive. Though I believe there is 40 days until a tsunami or rain destroys the like entire world. So you do have a time limit, if I remember right. Yeah. On the screenshot that's showing right now, there's 21. So that's 21 days left in the top middle there.
Delightful.
So it's just every form of heavy you can put on to something.
Yeah, really. No, I'm good. I'm going to pass, but I will say, as in as we've talked in the chat room during this, it still looks easier than the Turtles level.
Is it a hot take to say I never found that turtle? Was level that hard?
Yes, that's a hot take, and you're wrong.
That is a
it
was the one after it that I never could finish.
Well, because you can never practice it because you had one life left after the damn water level.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you only get to the third level like once out of every 20 attempts, and once you get there, you're like, I don't know what to do next. Oh, I'm dead. Got to start from the very beginning.
The only time in my life I ever beat that game was on the collection where you could rewind.
Oh, see? That's you can't call that. I know, you played it for real back in the day, so That's fine. Whatever.
I got really good at that water level.
How could you keep practicing? Because
I would die so much at the third one, mm-hmm. which is just needlessly complicated. That whole game was needlessly complicated. Yeah,
that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles : needlessly complicated.
Well, supposedly the devs didn't have... I think that game was in development before the cartoon even came out, which is why famously they're all with the red bandanas on the cover.
Well, I mean, wasn't there a comic before the cartoon or no?
Yeah, it was sort of based off of the comic, but at the time, no kid knew the comic.
Yeah, all right, fair. The comic was different than the cartoon.
Yeah. So. The comic was a lot more edgelord. Because it was a Daredevil spinoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Turtles are Marvel? Oh, wait, Daredevil probably wasn't Marvel then. Okay.
Yeah, like...
Image or whatever before that.
What's his... It was Mirage Comics, and Daredevil's master was called Stick, which is why Splinter is called Splinter.
Oh, same... okay, all right.
They're inspired by Daredevil.
Yeah, the main bad guys were called the Hand, mm-hmm. which is why it's called the Foot Clan.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all the stuff sort of makes sense when you have that knowledge. Anyway, I've been on a TMNT kick lately.
There's a new show or something, right?
No, I got down a rabbit hole and obtained the entire series to watch while I'm working on painting models.
And you decided the best thing to do with your life in 2026 is to play the Turtles water level.
No, I haven't played that game in a while.
Good. Keep it that way, Kelly. It's better for you.
I did it once when the Cowabunga collection came out just to finally see the end of that game.
Nice.
Anyway. Collectible turn-based RPG Zandrin, The Unbound has been announced. What is this about?
This
looks kind of Suikoden? No, it was the art style. I don't know. It does not look like your typical card.
Well, it's pre-alpha.
Turn-based.
So we're still early. What do we know? What do we actually know? We know it's set in a fantasy world of Kalatos. It's built around the power of the six blessings. So, wind, fire, earth, metal, electric. Okay, so not quite Captain Planet. Yeah, and heart isn't in there. And we've got electric. Each person's born with the power. Okay, so everyone's got a chakra power. And so it's Naruto. Got it. Except you have some person who's born without powers. Okay, so it's
Avatar?
No, I was thinking... oh, God. Cradle. Thank you, Cyriel. So now it's Cradle, which is a book series. If you don't know, don't worry about it. Okay. And then we've got players control Zinirndin, born in the Chaos region as he travels around the world to find out the truth about his family, blah, 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 blah. The game will include 25 playable characters, 60 turn-based stages and raids to take on, including tournament against AI components and hardcore battle stage is planned to be in the end game. And there's BDLC. I don't understand what is this?
I'm thinking tactical game somehow.
The developer promises that the game will offer gacha mechanics without microtransactions. Why, though?
I mean, was it one of the Xenoblades like that?
Xenoblade
2.
We also have another Eden. Begins.
Yes, it was, Kelly. It had that in there because you could draw on the blades. Sorry, what were you saying, Ryan?
Of the another Eden Begins is also probably going to be doing something similar with its marketing. It's, another Eden's a gacha game, and they had on the Switch Direct from or Nintendo Direct from a week or two ago.
Yeah,
another Eden Begins, which is the offline version of the game, basically.
Okay, Tiki Party in the chat. Tiki Party in the chat says it's MHA, and I have to remember which one is MHA.
My Hero
Monster
Academia.
Hunter.
My Hero Academia, I think, is the more correct one. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, man. All right. What's next?
Villain Code opening movie and gameplay details release. This is the game that's big thing is the co-founder of Atlus that worked on Megami Tensei and Persona is working on this, along with Persona's scenario writer and composer. So basically Persona with the serial numbers filed off.
Which I'm always up for, like, spiritual successor, like these talented minds moving on, trying different things. I'm curious how many people actually played Monarch, though, which I think was the last one that was touted as co-founder of SMT and Persona.
Don't know. Wait, we have the opening movie and gameplay details released, but we don't have the... Okay, there it is. Never mind. I was looking at the wrong thing.
This opening movie tells me nothing, so...
Yeah, no. Persona game opening movies never do.
Yeah.
They're always just, like, trippy little...
Hey, I could say... Look at this. This has on-screen icons for every character's attack, so I could say that this has gacha mechanics without microtransactions, couldn't I?
I guess.
Because it looks like a mobile game in the presentation?
Yeah. Game looks like Xenoblade to me.
It's an action RPG, like Tales.
Yeah, I know, just the little triangle move buttons.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. Had that too, yeah.
Yeah.
It's out on everything, and it's got famous people involved, and we'll see if it's great or not.
Set to release for PS4, PS5, Switch, and Switch 2 in Japan on June 29th. No word of a Western release, but I'm sure it'll come here.
Surprised they're not trying to get me to fund this game, too, with a Kickstarter.
Well, no wonder I've had Xenoblade on the mind, it seems.
A Xenoblade person's involved?
No, oh. Xenoblade Chronicles X is getting a Switch 2 version.
Who wanted one? that mean? I guess it already came out for Switch 1, so, like, why not bump it up to Switch 2?
Depends on what they did to bump it, I guess.
Well, I mean, it looks like it benefited from it, so... 60 FPS and all that. Well, up to 60 FPS. That, which includes all the frames from 0 to 60.
But, sorry, I completely lost my train of thought. The upgrade costs only $5.
Yeah, it's not free, but at least it's not a lot. Higher resolutions, better frame rate, blah, blah, you know, the stuff you'd expect. Like, make it use the extra power of the system, since by default games don't necessarily do that. And they do for this one. And then there's gonna be a physical version, I think. Yeah, physical version, which I don't think exists for the Switch 1 version.
No, it does.
Oh, it does.
Okay. I think it was Switch Store or Nintendo Store exclusive.
Gotcha.
Because anyway, I
remember
on
that being that's the Xenoblade Chronicles game that I tried playing a little bit, and, like, nobody seemed real excited to keep playing that.
Well, because it was on the Wii U.
I know some people were excited, so I should be careful, because, like, Cyrael in the chat's being like, I've been waiting for this, you're wrong. I was like, that's fine. Just, you know, this was the game where the talking points back in the day were, that's the one you have to play 30 hours to get your mount or your mech.
Yeah.
And then that's about it. And then it's $200 Xenoblade game that doesn't tie into the story of the other games, and you have to wait forever to get your mech. Which, that doesn't mean the game's bad. It's just that was the summary.
It had a pretty solid story, though. With some interesting implications for the rest of the franchise. And no, I think one of the only reasons why it kind of sucked was because it required that that stupid Wii U pad that felt like a cheap toy. And it was hard to see on that Wii U pad because it was just like a capacitive touchscreen that, you know, if you're used to a tablet, just looked like garbage. And I think that this has the potential to be one of the greatest Xenoblade games now that it's on a real console.
Is it on PC? No, right?
Okay. No.
I don't have a Switch 2, and I'm not going to buy one for this. Cyrael's like, this has a lot of the MMO trappings that you like in games. And I'm going to say, like, yeah, but it's missing one important one. Other people. What?
Yeah, because there was...
Wait, what did Ryan say?
PC?
PC. No. Well,
yeah, there was an online component to the original game.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
How did that work?
You grouped up to fight super bosses.
How many people?
I think it was up to 4.
Well, that's something. That's not really what I'm talking about, because I like just having a world that's lived in with other people that you don't necessarily know and you just meet.
Yeah,
I want random strangers to come by and milk me, okay? And if they're going to come and do that in my mech, maybe it's not milking, they're charging their battery or something. But, like, I can't have that in this game.
At least it's the mech and not the characters outside of it in this one.
Yes.
I always consider the online co-op doesn't mean I'm accurate, because I haven't played the game, to be, I guess, closer to Monster Hunter.
Yeah, you think a your bit characters more like that.
Combine them all together, but... Was there a cat feature or anything?
I don't know. I never touched.
Are there
the
cats to pet, Kelly?
You do get a cat in your base.
Now I know why you like this game.
I mean that wasn't.
Nope. Don't you lie to me. I know that's the main reason.
I honestly did not know that there was a cat in the game until I played the game and then did the cat side quest. And...
But that's why you're excited to play it again.
I mean, I bought it. I haven't touched it yet.
Because you're too busy playing other cat games.
Other cat games, yeah.
Yeah, I'm too busy breeding cats together for fun and profit.
Fair.
But, no, I'm glad that this game is getting a new life, because I thought it was one of the better Xenoblade games, and for the longest time, for me
wait,
at least.
Wait, what's one of the worst Xenoblade games? There's only 4, right?
When they're as long as they are, they feel longer.
Like they're all highly rated. I would say this is considered the worst one. So like to say it's one of the better ones is only because it's the 4th best out of 4 that most of all are really, really good.
I want to say it was 2 that had a, you know, weapon mechanic that people didn't like.
Oh, yeah, and Alex is in the chat saying it. Yep, he's like, 2 probably has the biggest difference of opinions. Like, I don't know, I played a lot of 2. I did not finish it, so I agree. That's got some issues in it, whereas 3 pulled me all the way through. I didn't mind the gacha system, but I guess if you got screwed by it, that would be real bad.
You had to do a lot of grinding to get, pretty much get all of the... good blades.
So yeah, if you're taking a completionist mentality in there, that would really be a pain.
Like there was one set of bats that dropped the super duper rare blade shards that I think I'd killed like a billion times to get a full stack of 100, and you would go through that full stack of 100 and get maybe 2 or 3 of the named good blades. So yeah, and each one of those good named blades had their own individual side stories and stuff. So I mean, there was a lot of depth to that game, but there was also a lot of tedium. No, I want to say the weakest Xenoblade is the third one, just because up until it got ported to the Switch, I found it to be. Since it was stuck on the Wii for the longest time, I thought it was just kind of like this game feels like a PS2 game. And then once it came out on the Switch, it kind of bumped up. So I don't know. Side question of the week. What's the weakest Xenoblade game?
Which 4 out of 5 do you think is the least 4 out of 5?
Cyril points out Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was on the Switch to begin with.
Yeah, no, I meant Xenoblade Chronicles 1.
Oh, the re-release of 1, which had... I'm still amazed. That game was improved on the 3DS from the Wii U or whatever, right? So
the Wii, yeah. Well, the problem with the 3DS version was that the text was too small.
Sure. But, like, to still also, despite that, to be considered better is weird to me. Oh yeah, because Xenoblade 1 is the trash can letter that I have over there. Yeah, of course, that's Project Rainfall. Project complain to game publishers and have them do what they were already planning to do to begin with.
Yeah.
Kind of funny, the studio that did that 3DS port otherwise does racing games, says Alex in the chat. Owned by iRacing now. Okay. Alex does, or Severin Mira, Alex, does racing, like iRacing stuff. He's got a rig. He's got a race car rig. Jealous.
That's cool.
I tried to talk Andy into that, and he said, no. And even I was like, yeah, that's fair. No, I shouldn't have that.
When you're doing iRacing like that, Alex, do you do one foot on the brake and one on the gas, or do you have to do it legit? Because we was talking about that last
week. He says he doesn't have the full rig I keep thinking he has. He just has a wheel on the desk. Okay. Fine. I thought you at least had like the basic wire, metal frame with the pedals. Lady S says, Chris wants a PoE rig. I do. I don't know what that would mean.
I thought that your basic setup now is that.
Yeah, it's like that's just plain PoE is just any rig. Like maybe it's got a treadmill so that you don't get too far out of shape while playing PoE for your entire life.
You have
to
actually walk all the distance. And
yeah, you have to generate the power yourself. I don't like where this is going. It sounds like a lot of exercise. What's the next story?
Lost Eidolon's Veil of the Witch update adds quick expeditions and a phantom arena. Expeditions are shorter runs with fewer battles and events.
Lost Eidolon's is a TRPG?
Yeah, it's
roguelike, a lot of fun.
It's Western Fire Emblem.
Western Fire Emblem. Like, I don't want to think too hard about that.
Literally the same. Josh played this literally like the same setup and everything.
The same setup.
Well,
Triangle, the weapon triangle, you mean?
Yeah, you have the weapon triangle.
Which they've gotten rid of in modern Fire Emblem. Yeah. So that's like so it's a modern retro Fire Emblem.
You have the same kind of skirmishes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's a lot more roguelike.
So this this is an update that adds roguelike stuff to the game. Is it free?
Yeah, the update is free.
Wait, no, I'm sorry. I apologize. And Alex is about to correct me a bit. Lost Eidolon's Veil of the Witch is a separate game.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a roguelike TRPG called Lost Eidolon's Veil of the Witch that's getting an update. With quick expeditions and Phantom Arena, so it's like some stuff to do while you're later in the game. The main game, just straight up Lost Eidolon's, is the more Fire Emblem game. So,
okay.
So there's two games.
I didn't know there were two games.
Yeah. So I didn't realize there was a second game either, so now I know, or now I can remember again for the third time. Who knows how many times we've talked about it, and I've just forgotten. This is part of the 1.3 update for Veil of the Witch. And it's available now on PC and coming to the consoles soon. I don't know what soon means. Sometimes soon has already happened by the time we read the story.
The Blizzard soon, TM.
All right. Oh, here's one that, Kelly, you should read this.
Shinigami Hime Ishokan no Kaibatsu gets trailer in
a bonus detail. Oh, you missed a word. You almost had it, though.
Oh, I missed to. Shinigami Hime to Ishokan no Kaibatsu gets trailer and abilities.
Try Kaibutsu again.
Kaibutsu.
There you go.
That's what I get for trying to say it way too fast.
Yeah, you were going way faster than you should have tried. So this is an NIS game.
I figured if I talked about it too, if I thought about it too hard, I would overcompensate. That's why I did it fast.
No, that's my fair.
Excuse.
Yeah.
So this looks like that series. That those other games that they had, the Liar Prince and the Liar Princess.
Spiritual Successor, I believe.
Yeah. You know which ones I'm talking about?
The Lion Prince and the Something Wolf and the Cowardly, I believe. Whatever. Yeah.
What?
Liar Prince. Liar
it's right
Princess
here.
And the Blind Prince.
Yeah. And the Cruel King and the Great Hero.
Great Hero.
So what's this one translate to?
That's a good question. What does it translate to? Do we not have that in here? Let's find.
No.
Let's go do it. Let's do it live.
All right.
Can
Google
I do this
translate?
Inside the browser? Can I translate?
Make sure you translate it to a completely different third language first for maximum entertainment. I mean, accuracy.
Not offering me. All right. The Death Princess and the Suicide Note Monster. Oh my god. So Shinigami, oh, we know this one from Bleach. Shinigami are like the you know, the effectively the Grim Reapers in Japanese mythology. Hime means princess. The rest of this is news
suicide
to me.
Suicide Note Monster, barely.
I mean, all right, cool.
What does my husband say?
Nothing. He just said, oh, I remember this one now. So the monster, I guess, is very dangerous, and you have to feed him books to burn. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, he eats monsters. So, yeah.
You have a pet suicide monster that's tracking you down. Or is that not with you, I guess?
My pet suicide monster, the unknown from the 80s.
My pet suicide monster. Is that like a band name or is it an album name? Just suicide monster would be a band name, right?
Yeah, but there was a My Pet Monster toy in the 80s.
Hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out why it, why the translate put in suicide note. Ishokan. Ishokan.
So if I just do Ishokan no Kaibutsu, it says a monster with a suicide note feel.
Okay.
So does it mean not note as in a written note? Maybe it means like, you know, notes of rosemary and thyme in a tasting. So it's a monster who's got a slightly suicidal aura about it, perhaps.
So the real translation is probably the Death Princess and the Suicidal Monster. Maybe. That'll probably get changed when it gets localized, I imagine.
Vaughn says, no, it is note as in piece of paper. And the somebody did a rough translation on the YouTube title for this trailer, which I guess this is NIS America, so it's probably not a rough translation. It's probably more close to, well, it's probably literal, but Princess Shinigami and the Monster of the Ishokan. So, Princess Grim Reaper and the monster of the suicide note, perhaps?
Yeah. Maybe? That makes sense. I don't know. I'm curious what this is going to get localized into. If it
yeah,
does,
not that, probably.
Because of the whole, that's been the kind of the theme of the series, is the blank and the blank. So.
Diki is like, I wonder what euphemism they'll use, because it literally means suicide. Well, they'll just have a different title that is still somehow thematically relevant, is what they'll do.
The sad monster.
The Grim Reaper princess and the monster has a sad.
I like that one actually quite a bit. Oh, the monster has a sad.
The monster has a sad. All right.
Okay, this was the controversial story of the week.
What?
Oh,
is this another Kickstarter?
Did I skip one?
Oh, no, maybe I did. Hold on.
I think I skipped one by accident. The Fighters Nova Mindra has been announced.
Yeah, this is another Kickstarter where you're a big tiger dude, it looks like. Maybe? Or are you the guy with red hair?
Wolf. It says that you're a wolf.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa, hold on. Let's pause for a second here. This Kickstarter trailer is very smart because it appeals to me. It's written for me because the first thing they do with words on their screen, instead of just the characters, which are like, we'll get into in a second, special guest composer Hiroki Kikuta, who is the one who did the music for Secret of Mana and Seiken, you know, aka Seiken Densetsu. So I love his music and he doesn't like do music. So I wonder how many they're going to have. How many tracks they'll actually have for him, but that's amazing. And I like that. Good job, Kickstarter person who made this video. But after that, we've got like, you say there's a wolf.
Yeah.
Are you telling me this guy is a wolf?
That's what the story
that
says.
Is a tiger. Actually, it's just a dude with a tiger head.
Fighters Nova follows a teenage martial artist and a mysterious wolf man.
That is not a wolf. I agree. Tiki Party in the chat is like, no. That ain't no wolf. Those are cat ears. And that face muzzle combo anthro thing is just, honestly, it looks like he's wearing face paint at the carnival.
Like, you know, anime furries are always look they animal are always androgynous weird. Yeah, all right. Anyway.
So So we've got Maya, who's a martial artist, and mysterious wolfman Mindara, and they go on an adventure and make friends, it sounds like. And then you can switch heroes and co-op and solo and comic book style chat bubbles.
Yeah. I mean, it looks cool. I just,
and beat 'em up was mentioned, I think, somewhere in there too.
I'm just with you. I think that that should be a cat too, not a wolf.
Tiki Party is like, that is literally a Caracal cat. I'm like, well, yeah. A rich JRPG adventure. How is it a JRPG adventure if it's a beat 'em up?
It's why I said I was wrong. It wasn't beat 'em up. It was fighting game.
Or are we going with JRPG based on region of development, which I'm fine with that being the definition. Whatever it is, let's just agree.
There's JRPG beat 'em ups.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, especially if it's regionally based, if this is made in Japan, it's a JRPG, and that's it. Yeah. It's just, when someone says JRPG, I do not think of this.
Well, no, most people think of Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest, but then you point out, like, well, technically,
most people think of Final Fantasies and Dragon Quests that aren't made anymore.
Yeah. and then you point out, well, technically Dark Souls is a JRPG, and then
that's right. Then you start an argument that goes nowhere useful.
The combat being a combination of Street Fighter 6 and Tales of Destiny, I get why you call it JRPG.
Yeah.
But, Tales of Destiny, is that one of the ones that I need to actually go into real life training to learn how to play that combat system correctly?
No, the Tales of Destiny is the first one on the PlayStation.
Oh, so probably not. Okay. All right. That was Tales of something or other. I still can't get over how hard that battle system was to figure out. I feel so stupid, and yet I don't want to do it again. And I never finished. I never figured it out. I don't have the skills to play a Tales of game. I'm sorry. What are we talking about?
Now the actual controversy of the week.
Uh-oh.
Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green releasing on Switch next week to celebrate the 30th anniversary.
These are the Game Boy Advance remakes of the first Pokemon game.
Yes. They are not coming to Switch Online. They are actually coming to the eShop, and it will be $20 each.
What?
And each language has its own version.
What? Wait, what do you mean each language has its own version?
If you go to the eShop, there's like three different SKUs for both versions of the game, and each SKU says English language, Japanese language.
Oh. That's a lot to get all the... Well, I guess it doesn't matter. I don't need it in multiple languages. I just need it in my first... So I don't care about the language thing. That's probably just how the ROMs were produced, I guess. I don't know. Go ahead.
It's how the ROMs were produced because... I think they just flashed like each.
Well, yeah, because Pokemon was one of those ones that pushed the storage limits of the GBA cartridge, right?
Yeah. But oh my god, the people online complaining about the price.
I said GBA, I meant just Game Boy. No, 20 is too high for this. This is a $5. This should be $5 all day. Yeah.
It was a $40 game when it came out, Chris. Yeah. Adjusted for inflation, that's $68.
Okay, but it's not just coming out.
Right now, the prices of the original...
We've had full remakes of these games since then, haven't we?
Technically, Let's Go, Pikachu, and Eevee. And that was just to get people to play... Or get people in from Go. But the prices of the original cartridges right now... I saw a photo on Reddit of one place charging like $150 for each cartridge.
And the Tiki Party says, what does this bring us that's new? Because you could already use Pokemon Bank with Pokemon Fire Red today, which I don't know where or how you do that, but okay.
That's actually pretty convoluted because you have to transfer the Pokemon from Fire Red to either Black and White or Platinum Gold. Diamond... Pearl,
yep.
Via a DS with a GBA slot.
Okay, and then once they're on the DS.
And then you use the bank, and then
you... Can you use the bank on the DS? Isn't that stuff all shut down?
The bank is still open.
No! But you can't download the bank if you don't have it already, I bet.
Yeah, and who knows how long that is going to last.
See, all of that just leads to me thinking, you know what would be simpler than that? Paying $20.
Yeah, that's my point.
Really, Kelly, though? Like, why isn't this just part of the virtual console?
Because they wanted $20.
Because they wanted money.
Well, okay. You want money for all those games, and we told you that we're not going to pay the amount of money you want for all those games for all those games, and you capitulated and made a subscription service. And now here you are taking this one game and be like, I bet you'll pay it for this game. And I guess we're going to find out.
And yes, people will. Because it's Pokemon.
Oh, that's so wrong.
One of the arguments I got in on Blue Sky was that they're like, Mega Man is coming out with the Battle Network collection for $40 and it includes everything. And somebody else pointed out, like, yeah, this is the Star Force collection. And somebody pointed out, yeah, the Star Force collection isn't nearly as popular as Pokemon. I don't think the price of this is that big of a deal, especially knowing how that $40 was half my paycheck in 2004, guys.
Where did you work?
Part-time at a radio station, and I didn't have a lot of hours.
Vaughn says, that's not the mic drop you think it is, but because it's on text, I don't know which of us he's calling out. All right.
I just think that
you're a Nintendo plant, says Tiki.
I just think Pokemon plant. Listen to me. I just think that people wanting a pittance for re-releases of Retroid games are being ridiculous. Because yeah, you as an individual that don't want to pay that are probably going to go emulate it anyway. But a good chunk of people don't care about emulation. They just want to play stuff, especially people with kids that want to introduce them to old Pokemon games.
Well,
this is Mystic Quest for a new generation. Got it.
So Tiki says, can you tell us about this value they so talk about too? Respect the value, they say. Whose value? I'm very confused. Who said value? Did you say value at some point in your rant?
I didn't necessarily say value, but I do think that there's something to be said about the race to the bottom when it comes to game pricing. That was a discourse during the mobile game age where
Kelly, they're slapping a ROM on an emulator.
Yeah.
Like $5 is fine. That seems easy.
What why do $5 when they can get 20?
Why not start at 20, and if it doesn't sell as much as they want, put it for half off and have everyone agree it's good.
Yeah.
It's Pokemon. Until something somehow fails, they're going to keep doing whatever they want, and people are going to complain and still buy it.
Well, you're right. I'm trying to think about how I feel about that. Should every game come out at $60, $100 and just gradually price fall until it's market? Should every game for re-releases of old ROMs, should there be a consistent pricing rule or not? You're going to say no. And I'm going to say I don't know, because I used to would have said yes, but when I try and come up with a coherent argument about why it should be this way, I don't have one, because there is no should or shouldn't. Like, it's just freaking... It's intellectual property I don't own, and they can release it for whatever price they want. And I don't have a say on that. So,
Go ahead, Dalandar.
From my viewpoint, this almost feels like it's more for the combination of the older generation as well as those who are like, hey, did you want to play what I played to kids? Simply because I always have a mental price point I'm willing to reach. Nintendo games never drop that low usually. So this is, in theory, the first time Fire Red Leaf Green has been $20. Because it originally.
So what
came
you're
out
saying
at four,
is we should be happy because it's coming out at 50% off its retail value.
Yeah, that's part of it. Bear in mind that the original releases also came with that adapter that lets you trade wirelessly.
Oh my gosh. Tiki Party, thank you for this. Former Nintendo of America marketing lead Why a former? Okay. Nintendo products have immense value. We must always respect that immense value, Ellis said. This is why things don't go on sale. Is that Kit Ellis? The value is the value, and we are seriously into that concept of respect the value of what this thing is that we have made because it is very special. That sounds like a Kit Ellis just diarrheaing from the mouth. Like, yeah.
And that happens. I don't know. And a part of why I'm passionate about this is because I'm an artist. And valuing your art and your time is something that's kind of a big talking point in a lot of artist communities where, you know, people want to pay.
This isn't about some independent artist whose ability to continue their career depending on it.
I know that, but...
This is like, this is the biggest, baddest, doing stuff to hurt the game industry company there is right now.
You know, one of the things I think of where I just kind of go, this is all moot anyway, is the amount of people that are going to pay $20 on two packs of Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather have Leaf Green and Fire Red than two packs of Pokemon cards.
And I'm sorry, I know how much I sound like a complete Nintendo corporate shill defending the price. I just think that given what I paid for it back in the day, I don't think $20 is that bad.
I'm going to tell you, I also think every Square Enix mobile game is priced 2 to 3 times too high. So, yeah. I think I have some consistency on this one. But now that I'm trying to justify it with words, I can't. But also, I do have the advantage of being able to say... Nintendo's evil and sues everyone for things that they shouldn't be suing over, so screw them.
And I know that Nintendo is not the innocent little company that many people proclaim them to be. I prefer things be easily accessible, even if they might be priced a little high.
That I do agree with. I'd rather it be up than not up.
And the other thing that bothers me is when people complain that, well, Nintendo doesn't make their older games accessible, and then when they do make their older games accessible, like this one, then it's like, well, it's not cheap enough.
I mean, I think that's correct, but it can still be wrong even if it's more right. Does that make sense? It's not black and white. That's a different series of Pokemon games. It's just
it's not a black and white. It's not a black and white issue, and pricing is a very personally subjective thing, because $20 might be too much for somebody for an old game, and that's fine. I just don't think it's that bad, but I would rather it be available at a premium price than not available at all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, because anybody that's not going to pay that is just going to go emulate it anyway, so why are you bitching?
So ultimately, the reason this is $20 is because they can get away with it being $20. And we just that's the world we live in. And as much as it sucks, we have to accept it and either choose to buy it or not.
Nintendo's already done this with a higher price point on the Mario games that were released only for 6 months for $60. And with the original Fire Emblem coming out for like a year or whatever it was, saying, you want this ROM version of Fire Emblem? It's $9.99 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say I'm not going to buy this, and that's my decision. And maybe they'll lower the price, maybe they won't, but like, that's it.
And I'm probably going to pick it up because I love Pokemon and I want to play through that game again, and I want to experience it with my husband. I feel bad like I bullied him into wanting to buy it. Because this shadow dropped on Thursday night, and I was all excited, and he's like, eh. And I'm like, what do you mean, eh? And he's like, oh, I think the Game Boy games suck. I'm like, no, I wanted to play this with you. And then later on, he was like, well, if you really want to play it, I will buy it.
That makes it all worth
it. And I'm like, I'm like, I'm sorry. Now I just feel like I bullied you. I don't want you to
think. What Nintendo's doing.
Is that how it went down, Vaughn? Make me feel better. But no, the Game Boy era was my favorite era of Pokemon games. And then later on, when they re-released Sapphire and Ruby on the 3DS and improved the hell out of those. It was like pure godsend. Yes, you did that. You guilted me into it, and you should feel bad.
All right, enough. Okay. I'm cutting this off. This is our question of the week. How do you feel about the price of the Pokemon games?
Well, I was going to ask our question of the week. We've got a Pokemon Direct on Friday. What are your predictions? Because I'm predicting...
Predictions? It'll be over by the time the next show happens.
But we can see who was the rightest.
Well, they can just write in after the fact, and we won't really pay attention to the timestamps enough.
Well, okay, well, be honest.
No, say I just... Pokemon discuss... Talk Pokemon to us. Talk Pokemon to us.
We did just release the backtrack talking about the 30th anniversary.
Like the pricing of the red... green.
While they're writing that out, I'll also point out Nexomon is $5 right now.
Yeah. What? Nexomon?
Just play another game, people.
There are plenty of Pokemon alternatives out there for consumption that are actually really good. Nexomon is really good. Oromon is really good. Temtem's kind of eh.
What's This Direct is going to be the new game, right?
It's just going to be a Pokemon Direct. Pokemon Directs can include anything, like from the games to the anime to what have you, the movies. But my prediction is Gen 10 announcement and Black and White remake announcements.
All right.
That is my prediction and my hope, but we shall see. And just for a wild prediction, out of nowhere, Pokemon Snap Super or something.
Alex points out an important thing. This is not a direct. This is a Pokemon Presents.
Right. My bad.
Because of the alliteration.
Yeah. I also want a new Mystery Dungeon game.
Yeah, all right. So you're going to get none of those things. You're going to get Game Freak talking about their new game, and then some plushie announcements. Some plushies, and then maybe a Japan-only food announcement for some Pokemon-themed restaurant.
Pokemon Sleep 2.
Okay. No, but that is more along the lines of what I'd expect.
Isn't there also a Pokemon... teeth brushing?
Yes.
App?
Yes. Okay. I think we're going to forget that exists at this point. And some nostalgia bait with Charizard. Thank you, Tiki. Yeah. All right. What's up with Box Knight?
Box Knight.
I enjoyed this demo.
You played it.
Tell us about Box Knight.
Yes. So it's Office Shenanigans meeting Castle Crashers. And the Box Knights are defenders of the office from the evils of the bosses around after 5 p.m. on Friday. So they basically wake up at their desk dressed with, you know, a sword and a box on their head for a helmet. And the Council of Janitors maintain the Box Knight code for new members. And you go around purifying drone goblins into regular sleepy office workers.
But shouldn't they all be going home for the weekend?
Not in this
world. Okay.
They're just kind of stuck at work forever because that's how 9-to-5 jobs work in office buildings. You never
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the gameplay in it. I couldn't get any of the parrying down, of course. So it doesn't help that there's a projectile they toss at you. And when I just couldn't get the basic, you slash once and you hit it back at them. But it plays out like, you know, a Hades type game outside of that, where you get, after each room, they'll give you a grade, which the higher your grade, the more options you can choose from for your leveling up. And you make it as far as you can. And basically just when you your character dies, you get more progression and upgrades, unlock new upgrades and stuff. So 30 minutes was decent enough time, and you know it's going to be on. They're trying to be on the humorous side of things because, come on, it's a council of janitors.
So yeah, very Castle Crashers, it seems.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I I like quirky games like that. I shall wishlist it. What about Dark RPG Annihilated? That was announced as a, did you play this demo?
I did. I will say, if anyone ends up being interested and plays the demo themselves, at least when I got it, it didn't default to the English language right away. So you had to kind of bumble around a few minutes to figure out where in the settings you could change it from Japanese to English. But I am more intrigued by the story and what they could do with it there than the gameplay. The gameplay was still fun. It's turn-based with time button presses for the attacks. So there's a bar that appears on screen, and you have to time your hit somewhere within that bar. Unlike a lot of timed presses, though, it just goes the one direction, just like a visual version of something like Super Mario RPG, where if you miss that window to hit, your character does nothing. But the story side of things, you're a member of a party that gets sent in to see what happened to the heroes party that's trying to basically save the world. And when you get there, you find that they're all still alive, but not quite right. And the first thing the character who's still able to speak coherently t mentions is they were attacked by people that knew that they were actually like immortal. So instead of taking away something that would just, I'm immortal, I'm not going to die. They took away like the mage's ability to use magic. The warrior is a doll now, so it doesn't actually have physical strength. The priest has basically gone insane and prays to a wrong deity now that's just like all death related. And the hero has no ability to speak, which heroes usually have rousing speeches and such. It is a bit of a deck builder. I didn't really get too many new extra cards, really. But there's instances where you can only use some of the weapons a certain amount of times before they break, and you can throw them for extra damage. It was a pretty difficult game overall, and I could see a lot of it was very dark aesthetically and like storyline wise. So like they could go a lot of directions with it, basically, as far as I can like go with that.
Okay. Moving on, we've got Valor of Man releasing in March on March 19th. Sci-fi themed strategy RPG coming out on Steam.
This was very CRPG like. There's no new demo that was mentioned, but I tend to grab anything that has demo available. There's a shared AP pool between all the allies. Reminded me of the CRPG and like the Pathfinder tactical version of it. With the shared AP pool, it meant that it was interesting to try figuring out who you're attacking and how you're using each of the ability. You don't want to use the same character too much and take up the AP pool, because like even if you get thief save behind for additional hits, the enemy will telegraph saying what it's going to do next, and when your character goes, the enemy goes. So it's almost like you're prompting them to attack as you're attacking yourself. So it's usually you might try moving your other characters out of the way, so when you hit the enemy you're fighting and it attacks, it hits nothing. So there's a little bit of additional strategy and placement and moving around. Plays out with nodes like a typical roguelite, though, so very much roguelite tactical RPG. There's just some aspects that seemed a bit more CRPG-like.
Cool. Whispers of the Eyeless is fully releasing in March, on March 17th. It's been available on Steam Early Access for a while, and yeah, the full version is also available through GOG. You are a cult looking to awaken the death gods, and all of the artwork has people without eyes.
Is this like Cult of the Lamb, but darker?
Looks like it.
Yeah, they have a very lore-focused trailer. And what else do we know? March 17th, and it's been in early access for over a year. It is a roguelike? Yes? No? Maybe?
Can't tell.
It yes. says strategy RPG in the description, but like I'm seeing roguelike, you know, Darkest Dungeon style menus, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
You didn't get to try this, did you, Talarin?
I did not, because a lot of early access games tend not to have the demo, because the early access is the demo, and I wasn't going to buy the game just for that.
Right.
On Steam, it does have a user-defined tag of roguelike, so that's at least procedurally generated scenarios based off of what I'm reading there. Oh, into a roguelike gauntlet. There we go.
Elemental Reforged. What is Elemental Reforged? It's a Diablo game. Oh no, it's a 4X. Okay. So, 4X strategy RPG hybrid Elemental Reforged comes out of early access on Steam, fully releases also on March 17th. It's going to combine the previous three Elemental games, 2010's Elemental War of Magic, 2012's Elemental Fallen Enchantress, and 2016's spin-off Sorcerer King Rivals. With a 3D engine as well as remastered visuals, features, and content, you get to make a character, you build up civilization, you face off against opponents, and seek to control shards of magic that grant new powers and abilities, three story campaigns, the ability to create hereditary dynasties, crafting system, numerous storylines, quests, and dungeons, 12 distinct civilizations, and a Steam Workshop support. So this is one of those games you play for like 3,000 hours, right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it.
Because, like, oh, let's start a new run where I go from no power to, you know, magician king of the earth. And that's after you've finished going through, like, the story campaigns, obviously. But, yeah, these can be great. These can be hard. I don't know. I don't have a lot of experience with Elemental. I do remember Fallen Enchantress being mentioned a lot at some point, but I haven't ever played it.
And my only experience with this kind of subgenre is Here's my magic and civilization. So
this looks like that's combining the two, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's I was gonna say that, but I went
I don't know if it's
qualified enough to know for sure.
Yeah, Heroes of Might and Magic has a thing where you walk around the map collecting resources a lot at the same time as your enemy is building up zounds and zounds of armies that will destroy you as soon as you finally try to go and attack them. Which is why I don't like Heroes of Might and Magic. But this seems like it's gonna be fine. I don't know. We'll see. And Magical Princess is coming out. Is this also March? It says spring. So this is from Magi Inc. and or Magi Inc. and developer Neotro Inc. They've just it's a daughter raising life sim. So Magical Princess sees players raise their daughter while she attends a magical academy. They choose which classes to attend. Shouldn't she have some say in that? Part-time jobs to take on and various other actions, including engaging in turn-based battles against monsters. Over 30 characters, 50 possible endings. I assume it'll be very cute. I don't know.
I would hope so. Was
the trailers and that, it looks very cute overall. It was one of the... interesting looking games. This is going to be in Steam Next Fest, and I'll give you one guess to who got this one. But it looks like it'd be a fun game. I enjoy Magi does a lot of visual novels, but they usually end up developing them as well. So it'll be interesting on a publisher's side, seeing how much visual novel and how much is RPG. But this is more on the cute side of things than worrisome.
So they've got a very cute trailer up where the voice actress from the game is reacting to how people have received the demo and thanking them for their nice reviews and getting mad at some of their reviews and stuff. So very neat. And it's on Steam, of course, and the demo's been recently updated and still available, and you can see if you like it. Again, that is Magical Princess. So They really should have just called it Princess Maker, shouldn't they? But I guess that's probably owned by someone else.
Yeah, I think that exists already somewhere. Yeah.
No, it does exist. We don't have like them in English. All right. Annapurna's got another game coming out, People of Note, which is a music RPG, I guess.
Yeah.
Looks
everyone has cool. Different
turn-based
music.
Party.
Yeah.
I don't know too much on this one. The demo was mentioned, but this was covered by Alex this week as an impression. So it's letting that speak for itself while still at least addressing game looks really cool.
What is what's it coming out for?
I do not have easy access to confirming that.
All right, let me check. We've got it coming out on PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch 2, and PC. It'll be $25 coming out. Like, I can't believe they want more than a Pokemon game. How dare they? Let's see. It's a turn-based RPG musical, and you have a band full of people. I assume they all have different, you know, musical rhythm game type stuff for their combat. And you can check out Alex's impression to see how the demo went. Is the demo still available? Yes, it is.
Yep. Cool.
I have always wanted to think of a game that has music-based combat where you're doing the rhythm stuff to do the damage. That's always been a cool idea to me.
Fretless was one I did get to play as a demo while we did a RPG cast last year, and it stayed very high on my wish list. I haven't been able to get around to it, but it's a lot more pixelated than People of Note, but Fretless had it was all based on RPG or sorry, guitar instrument riffs and stuff like that. So you would hit the button in time to seeing the screen doing the riff. I thought it was kind of cool.
So this comes out April 7th. People of Note. Heart of the Machine coming out in March. Another March release date announcement. Hooded Horse and Arkham Games announced Heart of the Machine is a sci-fi 4X strategy RPG. It's going to be on Steam, GOG, and Epic Store on March 6th. It's been in early access for over a year. Let's see. You are the world's first sentient AI created in a city on the brink of collapse. Players have free reign over their goals and can choose whether to rule the city with an army of robots, become a benevolent overlord, or something else entirely. You can interact with a variety of different factions, build various facilities, and buildings, and create androids of different classes suited to particular roles and jobs. So, okay, everyone's going to go be evil android, right? Or evil AI overlord?
Well, depends on how many options are really there. When I first looked into aspects of this when the early access came out, I kind of wondered if they were going to go into the Populous, if anyone remembers that old game, or I think they're called God Games, where like will you be able to do like a Sim City almost with RPG aspect to it? Or
I'm seeing a lot of like tactical RPG, XCOM. Yeah, XCOM style combat windows. So I'm not sure. Oh yeah, here we go. Here's a build menu. So here's some Sim City action.
Yeah. So I was like, how much are they leaning into the Sim City side, and how much can if they add the combat being almost optional? But of course, a lot of people like combat, so it'll be interesting to see if they do give that option, how many people go evil android route.
I don't know. And oh, the 1.0 version is including a new ending. Dragon is Dead is coming to consoles in April. Two-dimensional dark fantasy roguelite. Dragon is Dead is coming to consoles. It's been out on PC since 2025. It's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. This is from PM Studios and Team Suneat. And there'll be a physical Guardian edition, which I assume is a special edition, but they gave it a fancy name related to the game. It'll be released in North America on the same day, April 23rd. That includes a physical disc and cartridge of the game, a special sleeve, a set of character cards, and a Lore of Guardian letter. So this is a fantasy world where dragons have challenged the gods and all have fallen except for Guardian, leader of the dark dragons. Guardian has fully embraced evil and is corrupting the world through a rift. Players are tasked with slaying Guardian and Gurnian, and defeating his creations using skills, equipment, and runes to create their own character builds. Those looking to read more can check out Ezra Cannell's review of the game. My problem with this is I don't get to play as the evil dragon.
Yeah.
What the heck?
This was actually, my only experience so far was fond memories from PAX West 2023. This was one of the games I enjoyed most from there. I thought the combat reminded me, funny enough, of ActRaiser combat. There was no base building aspect. It's just the combat itself reminded me of
ActRaiser 2.
Basically.
Yeah. So this is, all right, 2D, left, right, platforming, action RPG. Is it a Metroidvania?
No, it goes level by level.
Okay.
So it'd be like you make it to a spot, beat a boss, and then it'll give you like, do you want to move to the next area type thing? And
gotcha.
Go to the shop, buy stuff, etc.
Right. Get powers, get stronger, and then
a lot of dragon? Loot, like Diablo levels of loot drops.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
At least in the 2023 version, I'm pretty sure that carried over, but.
So anyway, it's out already. You could go read the review and see how it is, and if you want to play it on consoles. Wiseman's World retry. Okay, so this is a weird one because it has capitalization stuff going on.
Yes,
Wise Man's World retry. So capital W I capital Z M A N S, then the word world, then retry where R is capitalized. T is capitalized, and there's a semicolon between re and try. So it looks like a cat walked on the keyboard while you were trying to type the title of this game. So it's from City Connection and Gravity. The game is a remaster of a 2010 Japanese-only Nintendo DS title that also released this remake, or this remaster, released in Japan in 2024. It is now out in North America and Europe on PlayStation, PC, and Xbox, and Switch. It's $25. And what else we got? And there's a Clear River Games physical. Oh, there is?
Yes. I did get a chance to play the demo for it. And you have your protagonist join a party with three fairy creatures they call homunculi. And when you defeat the enemies, you can get their soul. And it's an obscure game too. If you ever play Bahamut Lagoon, it's kind of like that, where you can feed the souls of the enemies to gain new abilities, and it alters the look of each of the fairy characters. So I thought it was neat and kind of ahead of its time, but at the same time, it was like, it's one of those. It's a good game back then. We'll see how well some of the, because it's still very much a 2010 game.
I mean, it's got a lot of cool things going on there, and I'm glad it's been up-resed a bit because, oh boy, the original version looks rough by today's standards, obviously. This is a Jalico game. No, published by Jalico, yeah. Developed by Landcars, which I don't know. I don't know if Jalico's still around, and I haven't heard of Landcars ever. This is interesting just to see, like, is this like a sleeper hit that, like, we're finally getting here and people are going to be all over it or not?
It looks cool.
Very similarly to other stuff we've mentioned today, it's one of those, even if it doesn't become a huge hit, I'm glad that someone looked at this and went, you know what I should do? Bring this available worldwide. I go, yes.
Yeah.
Every time.
Mixed reviews on Steam, but there's only 11 reviews. Landcars co-developed the Dio Field Chronicle, which I don't know if that's really saying a lot for them, but, like, at least I've heard of that. That was this. Wasn't Dio Field the
It was a very Enix?
Weird, RTS.
Yeah, it was a very weird strategy game.
It's a Square Enix Fire RTS-ish. Emblem, but nobody liked it.
More of Valkyria Chronicles.
Oh, Valkyria Chronicles? Right. Okay. Wait, how could it be Valkyria Chronicles-like? That would be a...
The RTS like ish aspect, because like, there's no stop and movement like a turn-based tactical. It's Valkyrie Chronicles like movement,
which is just wrong. Oh, that's Valkyrie Chronicles. I'm sorry. I'm thinking profile? Valkyrie profile, which is not the same.
And it seems I'm off base.
This is Alex says not really. Anyway, but that's Dio Field. We're not talking about Dio Field. We're talking about...
trailer.
What are we talking about? Wizman Retry. Wizman's World Retry. So go, and it's got a demo on Steam, so you can try it out. There you go. Dallar, another demo for you.
Yeah.
Go fetch the demos. And then finally, Drova Forsaken Kin is coming to mobile in April. I know you've been waiting for this, everyone. Deck 13 Spotlight and Just 2D announced a mobile release for grimdark pixel RPG Drova Forsaken Kin. This came out in 2024 for everything except mobile. Will now launch on iOS and Android on April 23rd, 2026. It's got controller support. Thank you. Always do controller report on your iOS and Android releases, please. Thank you. Drova Forsaken Kin is inspired by Celtic mythology. You get to, it's in a world where you capture the spirits that govern nature and rule over them. Wait, what? Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Celtic mythology, you capture spirits that govern nature and rule over those spirits. So I guess you control nature by nature of that. And you players, you join one of two factions, each with different values and goals. So I guess this is Ruby and Sapphire. And explore an open world, studying the environment and various mysteries to increase their strength. There's a announcement trailer for the mobile port, and it looks like, to me, like one of those games that if this had come out on the iPad when it was early, this would have been like, oh, see, the future of gaming on the iPad is great. Look at these sorts of things that are coming out. Now, Hairfrog has played this. I recognize this. So you can probably see in our stream VODs on YouTube, Hairfrog playing through this. And I think he was able to make his character look like a frog at some point. I don't know if that was intentional or a curse or just a trick of the light from one of the helmets. But anyway, coming to mobile. So if you're like, I really want a grimdark pixel RPG, but on the go, get excited for April. Drova Forsaken Kin. Okay. What else we got? Missed a couple. Two new early access releases. Volunteer the Ascension, which is coming to early access in March. This is a... what is this? I don't know this one.
Metroidvania, I believe.
Yeah? Coming out on everything. But the early access is only Steam. Yeah, that looks Metroidvania, all right. And this looks like... this has got like that nice quality animation, like Dust Kelly. So,
oh, cool.
Not exactly, not as much, because Dust was something special, right? But
I love Dust.
Yeah, it's got enough of it though. That's pretty cool. So, lots of special attacks. Boom, boom, boom. Press the button, kill the things, explore, find more places to go, et cetera, et cetera. Kill big, well animated bosses and feel like I'm in a movie. And etc. The end. All right. Volunteer. So that's early access. Hopefully it comes out good after baking for a while in early access. And it'll only be $20 March 17th.
One of the reviews listed, like posted by on Steam, says the Elden Ring of Metroidvania in terms of map size.
Oh boy. That's big. Oh, and let's see. We got a screenshot of the map. This is only a tiny part of it. Okay. Whew. Which means, does that mean it's all one continuous map that you have to navigate through?
That's what it sounds like.
I mean, I know there's teleports in Elden Ring. It's just like, oh boy. At first, before you have that, that could be daunting. Hey, who played Slay the Spire? I played Slay the Spire.
6 seconds into the trailer on Volunteer had all the maps connected and it looks giant.
Yeah. All right.
I got it from PSN and I've had Slay the Spire on my radar since you liked it so much, Chris.
Hey, cool. I never got good at Slay the Spire. So like I haven't done like Ascension runs. I'm just not good at it, and people argue that there are better, you know, deck building roguelikes now. But, you know, this is a sequel to Slay the Spire. So this one is, you know, Slay the Spire, but now see what they do now with many more years to think about things. So, the trailer has nothing to do with the actual gameplay, it looks like. It's just like cinematic dude fighting a monster for some reason and waking up so they can do it again. And then finally, halfway through, we get to actual combat. And it's Slay the Spire, and there's a map and all that. What do we got? Does this have some co-op stuff going on? What's going on? Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
One of the interesting things to me is that it mentions that it was built from the ground up, and it still looks very similar to Slay the Spire. Because brand new game engine.
Sure. Yeah, new visuals, expanded modding support, so they want to, you know, support better modding on PC. This looks like co-op to me, but I don't know. If nothing else, you've at least got more than just yourself and your party as support characters. So there's some extra stuff going on there, so that's neat. And then you also seem to have new classes and... It's 1,000 years after the first game, it says. If that matters.
The roguelike deck builder has a story.
Yeah.
I know they would never do it, but I would love to be entertained by a comedy version of a game where it takes place like, oh, every 1,000 years, the Citadel opens up. It's like 200 years later. And it's like, yeah, I'm just sitting here chilling. Nothing's happening.
So in the middle, it becomes like a town building game.
Yeah.
Town building comedy or something like that. Kind of like Tales from the Borderlands.
Yeah, none of us are going to be alive when this thing reopens. So we're just chilling. We just live. Like,
you have to make your town as nice as possible for the hero that does.
Yeah. Oh, what if it's generational? And like you have to build up and build up and build up and see if the hero succeeds. And if not, the roguelite element is go back 1,000 years and try again.
The blacksmith is going, can I stop making weapons yet? We're not even going to need them for 700 more years. They're like, nope. Your entire family.
You need to get so good at weapons that your kids are even better so that the weapons created 1,000 years from now are one-shotting the end bosses.
Yeah.
Then you get an iron sword.
All right.
That actually sounds like a pretty interesting premise.
Someone's probably tried it.
Peter Molyneux, where are you? Is that Wishing on a Monkey's Paw?
Yes, yeah, it is.
He's doing something somewhere still.
All right, what do we got for new releases this week? We've got Udawari Romano coming to PC. Udawari Romano Zan 2 coming to PC. Emberbane is a Hamlet... it's a Hamlet Metroidvania coming to PC.
All right.
Something got doubled up here. I hope it didn't lose something.
So you kill your uncle?
I don't know.
You
play as Ophelia. So yet again, Hamlet games seem to really be latching on to let's play as Ophelia and do different things because I loved Elsinore. And this is Emberbane and Four Elements, One Destiny, embark on an elemental journey inspired by tales of balance and power, reborn as a Metroidvania adventure. And it takes... Once a throne of pledge and bread, now a map of embers and graves. From that ruin you will rise. You are Ophelia, a lone orphan, a borrowed king, and a promise that will never die. Okay, cool, whatever. Like, do Shakespeare making games bazillion years later. Then we have No Sleep for Kaname Date. This is a visual novel, but like Andy loves it. So this is from AI, the Somnium Files. It's a port to PlayStation and Xbox. It's already out on like PC and stuff. We have Tales of Berseria Remastered on Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. So if you've been waiting for that Tales of Remaster, that's this week. We have the Pokemon Presents on the 27th, where you're going to tell us what you think is going to come out and then nerd up with us about what you like about it and whether or not you're going to buy Fire Red and Leaf Green, because those come out that same day. We have a pirate game, Rise of Piracy on the PC. Is this the piracy game I've been waiting for? It's coming to early access, so I probably won't play it at all because it's an early access and I'm not going to do an early access game, but it looks cool. It's a cool looking pirate game. If it's got enough... It has combat stuff in it, so I'm a little worried. Like, I just want to sail around, make money, and blow up some ships, and not to be too hard. And
I'm sad that the perfect pirate game that I've played is now over 30 years old. I think
is that Uncharted Sid Meier's Waters? Pirates.
Oh, no, Uncharted Waters on the Super Nintendo.
Mm.
You just go around sinking other ships and then like, hey, now I got a whole bunch of this. Maybe I should go discover
That this one?
That's the first game in the series, I think, but basically, yeah.
Oh, there's other ones. Oh, there are. Let's see. Uncharted Waters. We've got Uncharted Waters Origin, Uncharted Waters Online, Uncharted Waters 2. Oh, man. A
I
lot of these
didn't
are just
realize they made
Japanese.
that many, for the record. Uncharted Waters 2 New Horizons on the Super Nintendo is the only one I ever played.
Why is there not an English version of this? Or is there, and I have to find it somewhere else? Okay.
Super Nintendo was in English, that's all I
I
know.
know, but I want the PC version because then I can mod it when it gets too hard. Which is gonna happen because I'm after a pirate game that doesn't exist. Actually, I think there's probably like multiple games that would fulfill my mythical pirate game desires of like just sailing around in the glassy crystalline seas, getting wealth and shooting ships, and like I just have not bothered to, and I don't think I actually want to play any of them. And I think I just haven't admitted it to myself. I think they're all there.
Pirate Yakuza was pretty good. At
On the
least the
list, Cully.
sailing.
All right. And then finally, we got some DLC for a game called Burden of Command. This is the Three Nations DLC. It comes out on the 24th. And yeah, you can pick up DLC for this emergency, no, excuse me, emotionally authentic tactical leadership RPG. Yeah. Tactical leadership. That's what I said. I don't know anything about this game, but yeah, all right.
Kind of the closest it can remind me of Close Combat 3, and I can hope it's as fun tactically, but adding in the political side of things will make it interesting to see how deep they go for story.
Life and death decisions with permadeath. Oh boy. Okay. Yeah, this I don't know. All right. And yeah, all righty. Who wants to start bringing us through the editorials?
Well, since Dalandar did the Calamity Angel special delivery review, I thought figured that he could talk about it because it didn't sound promising.
Nope. As I've said to a few different people, one day I'm going to stop being lured in by Bad Idea Factory, but today was not that day. The game looked like it had a lot of promise. The special attacks and moves have very entertaining visuals and like almost full stories behind them. It's a turn-based RPG that mixes a board game like Monopoly, where you spin a spinner and it tells you moving however many spaces. And the actual turn-based combat did one of the more frustrating things I could possibly imagine in an RPG, where every character just at least 50% of the time will just go, no, I'm not listening to you. And that would mean you'd go, okay, I want my knight who doubles as they fall asleep often. Like, use quad slash. You'll be able to beat this boss right now. No, I'm tired. And then goes to sleep for 3 turns. I'm like, all right, how about I try something else then? And it's just over, your magician. It loves punching things instead. So just, nah, I don't feel like using magic, so I'm just going to punch instead. And that's funny and like entertaining the first couple of times, but even over a 20-hour RPG, I didn't want to handle that anymore.
Oh, that sounds annoying.
And since you played the game as well, the chatter made me miss the days of Silent Hope's Princess.
Wow, that's bad.
Every single thing that you like, when you do the movement spinner, it'll be like, okay, would you like to go to the compass or do you want to look in the menu? So when you start scrolling down to go to the menu, there's a voice line. When you're in combat, there's a voice line for every single thing you go through. So I mentioned quad slash. Well, there's double, triple, and a different slashing move there as well. And they'll start making a voice line, or that they'll finish if you let it. But either way, the beginning part will show up every time. So it's just eat, like every time I use this character, I hear that 9 times type thing. And no. And what was entertaining a bit about that is how they would not shush, yet a lot of the more climactic scenes were not voiced in English. So you could swap to Japanese if you wanted to, but it was mostly just to hear the, it's better than just reading the dialogue. So if you want, just keep it on Japanese. It didn't really help for how, like, all how chatty the characters were, whether it was English or Japanese, they're going to talk no matter what.
Okay. I will have to take this off my wish list because it sounds like I do not recommend.
For me, definitely, it is not a, something I'm recommending to anybody.
Disappointing. I do think Idea Factory can be good sometimes when they have a good comedy game. Not so much this.
Yeah, if you're gonna try a Idea Factory, Madoma Monogatari has had better humor. The combat was still kind of dull, but at least there was nothing that it did to outright frustrate. So this one is not the easiest sell afterwards. It definitely has a fun-looking premise, and the characters and the character designs are a lot of fun. Some of the weapons are entertaining too. Like you'll have a your tank character who's all heavily armored. It starts as a sword, then turns into a tiger's head with a spike inside of it, or tiger's headed shield. So it's a sword shield. Your protagonist uses a stamp sword, which is basically a stamp at the end of a long sword. Like, there's some fun in here, just doesn't really come together well.
Okay, so we've got an adventure corner, a couple of adventure corners. One for Paranormasite, The Mermaid's Curse. This was that Square Enix adventure game from Alex Ford. This is from Alex Ford, by the way. Is the Paranormasite more of a horror visual novel? Anybody that knows?
I don't know, unfortunately. So,
Or mystery, or the vibes I was getting, but I don't know for certain myself.
okay. I was just curious. Because this is the second game in the series, isn't it? I think that there was another Paranorma site. I don't know. I don't keep up very much with adventure games, unfortunately. So you can check out
There is
Alex's.
another Paranorma site on Steam, and Mermaid's Curse is has mature content description mentioning that while trying to solve the mysteries of the seven curses, you'll encounter depictions of violence, bloodshed, and other content not suitable for all ages. So horror mystery does seem applicable.
Okay. Well, you can check that out. And then we've also got a Dungeons of Dreadrock Adventure Corner from Michael Baker. This looks more RPG than adventure, which I'm confused.
Oh, so the thing here is, it was originally for iOS and Steam, and also available on the Switch. And now he's checking it out now. And no, that's really all I got. I don't get it. I don't know. It's like Tower of Jiraga, it sounds like, but in a good
Yeah.
way, which is weird. Which means there's lots of. Isn't that the one that had like lots of weird warps back and forth? I don't remember.
Yeah, Tower of Jiraga was so notoriously obtuse that they had a in Japan next to the arcade unit, they had a little booklet for people to write down hints for other people in the
Wow.
arcade.
Yeah. This one, yeah, I don't think there's any character progression like an RPG, so like that's probably what's going on. So.
Top down puzzle adventure, according to Steam, where they say takes the old school first person idea, think like Dungeon Master and Eye of the Beholder, but shifts it to top down.
Okay. So you can read that from Michael Baker.
Jordan McLean gives us a Verso's Drafts deep look. That.
Verso's Drafts.
DLC. Yeah.
Oh,
It's an
okay.
update, a free update, free DLC slash update to Clair Obscur Expedition 33. So it gives you 3 to 5 hours worth of additional playtime. It's free, and gives you some weird art stuff you can do, it looks like. And yeah, if you want to read more, if you've already played it 33 and wondering if it's worth going back to do this, Jordan's got you covered. Go check it out.
Sounds cool.
hey, here's another, wait, this is, yeah, People of Note has a, what, an impression. So, like, we talked about People of Note earlier, the rhythm action, like, the rhythm music game slash RPG, where you got a bunch of different band members, and they got kind of different styles to do their rhythm game stuff for their combat and whatnot. We have a demo impression of it, so you can go check that out and see what Alex thinks about it. I think that brings us to the end of editorial content today. Yes? Maybe?
That's it.
Oh, no, there are two more. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Jordan gives us a demo impression of Ariana and the Elder Codex. That's the one that kind of, I was thinking, might be slightly Vanillaware. So you can go check that out. Or Vanillaware. Slightly Odin Sphere.
Yeah, that's Vanillaware.
Yeah.
Still Vanillaware.
Yeah, true. Fair enough. So see what he thinks of the demo. And then Let Yourself Be Huge, a reflection on Yakuza Spirit of Personal Liberation. This is an editorial talking about themes and whatnot in the game. So Joseph Tingle wrote this. Not to be confused with Chuck Tingle. I wonder if they're related, though. Probably not. Thank you, Joseph. And so go check this out and see their thoughts on Yakuza stuff and growth and whatnot. So I did not read this yet, so I'm going to check it out later.
Yay.
All right. And is that it? Is that it?
Sounds like it.
Okay. Whew. Thanks, everybody. I want to remind you of two things. One, we stream live 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern every Saturday on twitch.tv/RPGcast, except for twitch.tv/RPGamer, except for the few times that we don't. And apologies in advance when that happens. And then we have a way for Discord. So you can go to the Discord, join the podcast channel, comment on things like the question of the week, which this week is, talk Pokemon to us. Do you like the pricing of the red-green re-releases? What do you think will be in this Pokemon Presents? Give us Pokemon thoughts. Complain. This is your chance to complain or praise or say everyone's crazy for caring about Pokemon at all. What else do we?
I'm sure that will be a take.
What else do we have to tell people about? We've got streamers going all the time on RP Gamer, so you'll see Hair Frog probably tomorrow. We had Spare Parts earlier doing Might and Magic. We have I don't know what Scar's playing now tomorrow morning.
8-bit Adventures 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he did jump to a new game.
I'm very happy about that.
Nice. Yeah, that's on my list of I should play that, but probably never will. Because I'm too busy being a cow in an MMO. Let's see. What is anything else to say? Ah, I want to know what you're going to play this week. Ryan.
Well, for me, it's going to be deciding among many of the Steam Next Fest demos, because Steam Next Fest starts on Monday. We will be having a feature coming out soon after, or a bunch of us are going to be looking at some really interesting RPGs, and we can hope most, if not all of them, are good ones too. At the very least, there'll be some opening of the eyes and on the indie level to see, they're making something like this.
And then Kelly.
More Mugenix, more Dragon Quest.
Yeah. I'm going to be playing more Project Gorgon, and I know one my assigned demo for that Steam Next Fest is Darkhaven, so I'll be playing that. Yeah, I don't think the upcoming releases here for me this week. Yeah. That pirate game is the only thing that I was actually seriously considering, and I think I've got enough. I'll wait for the full release. So. All right. Okay, that's a show, folks. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Please let us know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, and keep that feedback coming. That helps us shape it and do a better job. And I don't say that enough, so I just wanted to bring it up this time. So, okay. Yeah, we'll see you next week, everyone. Until then, have fun playing games, catch up on things, and I hope you're staying warm out there. Bye.
Yep, bye-bye.